you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution.
That not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up, get up, get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. And don't forget, if you want to email me, please do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. revolution@lizbrown.com. Get up, get up, get to me, huh? 70%. That's the number, ladies and gentlemen. That's the number. 70% of the people that worked at, who responded to the World Trade Center have lung problems. 70% of them. Let me ask you this. What percentage of the people do you think that responded to Katrina are going to have all kinds of illnesses? And what does it say about the country that we live in? They're saying that they've described it as, it is known as the World Trade Center cough. This is the result of a study involving the largest study involving health issues linked to 9/11, and it's going to be published Thursday, tomorrow. The World Trade Center cough, and they find that the lung ailments are most difficult, most problematic with people that who arrived first at the site. 70% of the people responders had new or worsened lung symptoms after the attacks. Among the responders who had no health symptoms before the attacks, 61% developed lung symptoms while working on the toxic pile. One-third of those tested had abnormal lung function tests. This report comes as public concern over the fate of Ground Zero workers has risen. You see, there's a class action lawsuit against the city and its contractors. 8,000 workers and civilians blamed 9/11 for cancers and other ailments that they developed after the attacks. Our government was not telling us the truth. The air was not safe to breathe. It was obvious that the air was hard to see through, let alone breathe. Thank you, Christine Todd Widman, Well, that's right. She's quit her job. She all right. My name is Liz Brown. I'll be back at you. Stay with me.
Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. No matter where you live, no matter what your lifestyle, you'll find out how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. My guests and I will give you the 411 on everything from classic design to the newest decorating trends. Join me, Alan Brainerd, for Design 411 every Wednesday at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your home.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Got shall get, them that's not shall lose. So the Bible said, and it still is news. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own.
Welcome back, welcome back. God bless the child. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 1-877-920-WGNU. It is fascinating to me. And I think it's really a measure of who we are as a nation and who we are as people. How we treat each other when we're ill, how we respond. There's a story on the front page of USA Today. 35 people drowned in a nursing home in New Orleans. The grand jury is going to, this is the first grand jury that has been seated since Katrina. They're going to hear the about the deaths of these seniors at St. Rita's home. On the one hand, lawyers have filed a suit against the governor Blanco, against the federal and state and local officials, that they failed to evacuate St. Rita's residents as Katrina approached. And on the other hand, the prosecutors are saying that they didn't do enough to evacuate. St. Rita's residents died after a wall of water washed into the nursing home, trapping frail and immobile patients. The folks that were in the nursing home, that own the nursing home, say that, and they filed a lawsuit to say that, inadequate levees allowed 13 feet of water to fill the 20-year-old facility that had never flooded before that. The families are upset, saying that it's a delay tactic on the part of those who own the facility, saying they don't want to face the blame. One of the cases that has, and I gotta at least believe. That I gotta believe that the lawyer that's representing the owners of this nursing home, when he says that, does anybody not believe that this entire debacle wasn't caused by many different parties? Does anybody think that just two people were responsible for this? And then you look at the doctors that have been charged with murder for the seniors, or the people that were in their hospital when the buildings flood. I cannot imagine being in a facility with water coming up to my chest or my knees and patients dying and suffering. What do you do as a doctor? What do you do? No electricity. Your patients can't breathe. The ones that were hooked up to oxygen, they can't see. You can't feed them. You can't keep them from floating away from you. What do you do? Is it murder? Is it murder? When you take that needle and you put it in a patient in that situation, you don't know when things are going to... You don't know. Do you watch people suffer and die? Does a doctor do that? Does a doctor do that? We have dozens and dozens of doctors that have come out in defense of those that were in the hospital for those days while they watched their patients die, suffer in front of them. What would you want them to do with your mom or dad? Or aunt or uncle or brother or sister or son or daughter? What would you want? My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call, 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 1-877-920-WGNU. You want to email me, do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. That's revolution@lizbrown.com. I was talking to a friend of mine about the world that we live in. I was talking to them about a story that we reported yesterday on the Global News Report about a foul habit of George W. Bush in the presence of his new employees. And she said, did I hear someone say what I heard, thought I heard them say on the air yesterday? I said, yep. And we talked about that. We talked about the manner of man you would have to be, the manner of man that you would have to be to do something to engage in that bodily function in the presence of your employees? What kind of man do you have to be to make them sit there and experience that body function? And I got to thinking, Boy George in the White House is like, imagine if the 12-year-old bully of the school was suddenly made principal of the school. The biggest bully in the schoolyard was made the principal of the elementary school. How do you think that people would be treated under those circumstances? The bully would live out all of his deepest fantasies, his meanest fantasies, fantasies that go beyond sticking firecrackers up the behinds of frogs. So just think about that. George Bush is the bully that is now the principal of the school. And he can make you stay and just think about how ignorant and how much of a bully tactic it is. A mean little boy bully tactic to engage in that kind of bodily function with people and make them stay there and have to suffer in it. That's awful. But that's what a bully would do, that a bully would take pleasure out of doing something like that. It's nasty, it's mean-spirited, and it is a super, super, super bullying thing to do. And that's what happens when the bully's control. That's what happens when the bullies are in charge. That's what happens when Boy George is in charge. Of course, that's what he's going to do. And I believe that people like that stay awake at night thinking about awful things that they can do to make people pay for whatever. 1-877-920-WGNU 454-0400 is the phone number. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. And don't forget, we have the International Urban Institute on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., 1020 North Taylor. You need to join us, 1-877-920-WGNU. My name is Liz Brown. I will be back at you. Don't forget that the school watch is in the next hour. We have some interesting news coming out of the St. Louis Public Schools this morning as well. You need to get up. You need to get to me. Also, when we come back, I'm going to share with you some of the results of the elections that were held yesterday. Folks that won it, folks that are going to be on the ballot in November, it's going to be fascinating. You need to get to me. We're going to take a break here. 1-877-920-WGNU. Stay with me.
Morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's. Northbound 55 at Loughborough, there are reports of motorists with a flat tire in traffic lanes. Use caution there. Eastbound 70 at Salisbury, there's an incident that's been cleared. Eastbound 70 between Bryan Road and T.R. Hughes. Look for traffic to be building. Northbound 270 is slow on either side of 44. Eastbound 40 from 141 all the way to 270, you've got heavy volume going on there. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270. Expect heavy volume in the right lane. Westbound 270 from 367 from 367 all the way to 170. Look for no problems to report. And all your approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge are looking good at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's. Start with a cup of McDonald's fresh brewed premium roast coffee. Add a warm, fresh made biscuit sandwich and bring your morning into full life affirming focus. Wake up and smell your life. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s. For this evening, mostly clear with a low around 60. For Thursday, mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s. And Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 58 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 59. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920. WGNU discusses the issues that matter most to you every day. And if you have a relationship problem with a friend, coworker, or family member, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in every Monday through Friday afternoon from 2 until 4 and take on the day with me, Dr. Laura, on AM 920 WGNU.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else, where else, where else indeed? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves. Get up, get on over to Sears. They have everything that you need to make your house a home. They have the tractors, they have tools, they have treadmills, everything that you need. Get on down to Union and Natural Bridge, get your shop on, get on over to Sears. Tell them I told you to.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land with the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
And we're the hosts of Let's Get Wealthy, investing in more ways than one.
We'll discuss home ownership as a means to build wealth, create positive personal finances, stabilize our neighborhoods, and acquire the American dream.
Tune into our show, Let's Get Wealthy, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. to get some food for thought during your lunch hour. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Kathleen Harris, the woman that brought you George W. Bush. The woman that has done amazing things to, or at least done her share to prop up the plastic surgery coffers. She is now going to be the Republican running in Florida for the Senate seat. Huh. She won with 49% of the votes. And the Republicans, by the way, after they finished using her, they didn't need her anymore. They didn't want her in the race, but they got her anyway. Going to be interesting in Florida. Speaking of people that are no longer wanted in Great Britain, there has a private letter has been drafted
from the majority of the Labor MPs telling him to resign. Ouch. 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 And it's kind of a secret, or it's kind of unclear whether or not this letter, what this letter says, that this letter exists, but know this. That it is was organized at the weekend after Tony Blair said that he would not give a date for his departure. If the Prime Minister has decided that to set a timetable of his departure will undermine his authority, and his authority is already undermined, the obvious thing is for him to go. Does that sound like George Bush? We can't set a timetable for when we're going to get out of Iraq. Do these guys just sit down and decide what the how they're going to say things? Tony Blair has said it would encourage the enemy, basically, if y'all knew when I was stepping down. Tony Blair's party has now written a letter saying that they want him to step down. Boy George's world is crumbling all around him. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. There is much for us to talk about. And don't forget that the show can be, you can find it at whiterosesociety.org. The shows are archived right there, so get on over. If you've missed an hour, go get your hour at whiterosesociety.org. I was, I don't know, thinking, as George Bush finally gives us a, I take that back. In his world, boy George gives us a timetable, a strategy. A strategy for this war. 5 years later, we get a strategy concocted within the mind of George Bush. And yet, and still, I was thinking about, we just now get a strategy, and 5 years later, there's no response to, there's no explanation for, there's no comment on. Where the money has gone. We have a strategy without explanation, a Boy George strategy without explanation. 2005. CIA officials told the Washington Post that 50% of the CIA's budget, that's $20 billion, would go to private contractors. That's an astonishing figure. Half of the CIA's business would go to private contractors. What could go wrong with something like that? Well, in 2004, the Orlando Sentinel reported that a Titan employee, Ahmed Fateh Mebala, an Egyptian translator, was arrested for possessing classified information from the Guantanamo Bay prison camp. Critics talk about that abuses at Abu Ghraib are an example of how the lines can get blurred when you have private contractors involved in intelligence work. The CIA hired out 36 interrogators in Iraq, 10 at Abu Ghraib. Yet and still, even though we've spent these billions of dollars for hiring these private people to do CIA work, this isn't like building a dam. CIA work by private contractors. How can you even say that in the same sentence? How can private contractors do CIA work? And None of these private contractors have been charged with the crime, despite the fact that at least 10 of them worked at Abu Ghraib. And we know that one employee, through a leaked memo, Stephen Stefanowicz, was involved in the abuse of prisoners. So we have private suits that have been put together to go after private contractors that the CIA hired, half of the CIA's $40 billion budget. And for you math majors out there, that would be $20 billion going to private contractors. Talk about your giveaways. Talk about your giveaways. One of the companies that was given all this money for interrogation, now remember, they haven't given any of the money back. Because of the private lawsuits, they've said this company, the CACI, said it would no longer do interrogation work in Iraq. And it's not just that the CIA is creating war profiteers. Bechtel received the largest no-bid contract probably ever, $2.4 billion. They didn't have to bid that out at all. To help coordinate and rebuild a large part of Iraq's infrastructure. But the company's reconstruction failures range from shoddy school repairs to failing to finish a large hospital in Basra on time and within budget. $2.4 billion no-bid contract. According to the General Accounting Office, 48,000 private security and military contractors are stationed in Iraq. And this is because the Pentagon's insistence on keeping a lid on military force requirements is one reason that this number has grown so much. What they have created are, ladies and gentlemen, corporate warriors, and we're paying for those. Corporate warriors. How much is that costing us? $200 billion. By 2010. If we stay in there till 2010, it would be $200 billion. Now, these aren't people that are trained by the military. These are private folks. That's why they're called corporate warriors. And as a result, they put us more at risk, and we're paying $200 billion. We will pay $200 billion for these people. So help me with this, because I'm getting a little confused here. What is the strategy of Boy George? Why do we have to stay here? Why do we have to stay? And look at the companies that they have hired for these corporate warriors. Aegis, A-E-G-I-S. A UK-based firm whose founder and CEO Tim Spicer was implicated for breaking an arms embargo in Sierra Leone. They're mercenaries. And that's the word on the street. Mercenaries. 1-877-920-WGNU. And they're more. They're more. Custer Battles. Now, who are they? They're the first Iraqi occupation contractor to be found guilty of fraud. A jury ordered the company to pay more than $10 million in damages for 37 counts of fraud, including false billing. You think we got that money? Nope. because in August, a judge in the case dismissed most of the charges, ruling that since the coalition provisional authority was not strictly part of the United States government, there's no basis for the claim under U.S. law. Kiss yo $10 million in fines. Goodbye. My name is Liz Brown. We're taking a break. Stay with me.
News update. Dateline Jerusalem. Leaders of Israel are expressing serious concern over a decision by Great Britain, Germany, and Italy not to allow Israeli cargo planes to make refueling stops in their countries if they contain heavy cargo from American air bases. One government minister says the move impacts on the security of Israel and hurts the national defense effort. The cargo planes are having to fly with less military equipment on board in order to make stops in those countries, and that is causing Israel not to have the level of munitions and weaponry it says it needs to defend itself. And Dateline Chicago. Six children were killed in an apartment house fire in Chicago early Sunday morning. The dead ranged from 3 to 14 years old. Investigators say the blaze started from a candle, which was being used by the family for light, because the family had been without electricity since May. A total of 10 children and two adults were living in the crowded third-floor apartment. The parents came from Mexico 15 years ago and worked a low-paying job in a laundry. Neighbors said they were very devoted to their children, who did homework every night by candlelight. Early reports indicate there were no working fire alarms in the building, even though city ordinance calls for every apartment to have one. The landlord, who is a wealthy developer with connections to Chicago politicians, says the smoke detectors were hardwired into the building's electrical service, and that could be why they didn't work if the power to the apartment had been cut off. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
Hi, this is Herb Steck. I'm the host of The West Wing, right here on WGNU Radio. Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., covering politics here in St. Louis, across the state, in the Capitol in Jeff City, and on the national level. Call in with your questions, your comments. Drop us an email, wgnu@hotmail.com. We'll be happy to talk about any political subject you want to talk about on Wednesday nights, right here on The West Wing with Herb Steck.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454-6609. is my fax. My toll-free long distance is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much business to talk about. Who are some of the other war profiteers? Nor USA LTD. Nice business if you can get it. They were incorporated, they were created shortly after the war began. They have received $400 million in Iraq contracts, including an $80 million contract to provide oil pipeline security. And it is said that he got this contract because he was friends with Chalabi. In fact, he received a $2 million finder's fee. And these are people that had no prior experience, that its bid on the oil security contract was too low to be credible. Another company consultant who hasn't denied getting paid to help out is Richard Cohen, a former defense secretary under Clinton. Wonderful money if you can get it. Can you imagine getting a $2 million finder's fee? Isn't that sweet? $2 million for hooking them up. $2 million. 1-877-920-WGNU. This probably will come as no surprise to you, but it certainly is evidence. When you talk about stuff, you need to know that the evidence that supports what your position is. The White House funneled millions of dollars through major Republican Party's contributors to Joe Lieberman's primary campaign. Did you hear what I said? A senior GOP source said that the money was part of the Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove's strategy to maintain a Republican majority in the Senate in November. They said that Karl Rove, along with the Republican National Committee Chairman Ken Mellman, directed leading pro-Bush contributors to donate millions of dollars to Lieberman's campaign for re-election, in an attempt that he would be a Republican-leaning senator. Now, Joe Lieberman took the money, and he said, I'm not going to play ball with you. You a lie, and the truth ain't in you. He took millions of dollars from the Republican contributors and said, I'm taking this money, but I'm not going to play ball. You already playing ball. You already kissing. George Bush is already kissing you. What do you mean you ain't going to play ball? You already playing ball with him. Under Rove's direction, the GOP, that's the greedy old party, has abandoned its Senate candidate in Connecticut. He has about 5% in the polls. A Republican candidate has failed to win the support of any national Republican and has virtually no contact with the White House. In contrast, despite the fact that Lieberman has called for the resignation of Rumsfeld, Lieberman was deemed a major component of the GOP strategy in November. In July, the Republican National Committee provided the Republican Party in Connecticut with $120,000, the eighth largest contribution that month. George Bush said on August 21st, I'm staying out of Connecticut because the party has suggested that I stay out of Connecticut. Plus, there's a better place to spend our money, our time, and our resources. Lieberman has raised most of his money from outside of Connecticut.
And according to Karl Rove's plan, isn't that interesting? Karl Rove's plan about Joe Lieberman's campaign. Lieberman would vote with it. Now this is what Karl Rove is saying the money is going to be spent, or the money was spent for. Here's the expectation: that Lieberman would vote with the GOP on national security issues and help provide the party with a 50-50 split on major legislation when the deciding vote would be cast by Cheney. Republican leaders would be more than happy if their Democratic colleagues erected procedural hurdles against these efforts to fight terrorist organizations. Understand that Joe Lieberman fits into the Republican strategy because the Republican Party is going to make national security the leading issue on the agenda from here into November. From here, if you don't have an opinion about the war, you sure gonna have one. You sure gonna have to have one by the time November rolls around. Because that's what's going to be shoved in your face, is this war. And they're going to try to tell you that it's working. And I don't know, I'm starting to feel a little bit better about American people out here. There's on the front page of the USA Today, they must be listening to the wake-up call. Most consumers, they do these little consumer polls. Most consumers think that higher gas prices are permanent. So y'all can try to play with these gas. Like what I said. Didn't I just say that last week? That they can roll these prices down right now, these gas prices down right now. But nobody believes that they're there to stay. Check this out. 24% of the American people say that the higher gas price, well, let me read the question. Do you think that higher gas prices this year compared with last year represent a temporary fluctuation or a more permanent change? 24% said temporary fluctuation, 2% said they don't know, 74% of the people surveyed said, oh yeah, this is real, this is permanent. Who you think they're going to take this out on? Who you think they're going to take this out on? One 877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. My name is Liz Brown. In the next hour, of course, we have the St. Louis Schools Watch. The St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs. You don't want to miss that. 1-877-920-WGNU. I will be back at you in the next hour. Stay with me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother. Talk to me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. People who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are good.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Get ready. Here it comes.
This is KidsCast.
News for kids, by kids.
KidsCast is brought to you by the Missouri Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse.
Reminding you that underage drinking can have dangerous consequences.
Visit us online at KidsCastRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Cady. Do you spend much time watching the news? How about reporting? Here at KidsCast, we're always looking for reports sent in by kids. Coming up, we'll give you tips on how to write a great news story and tell you where you can send it to get on the air. Don't go away.
This is your Kids Cast Brain Teaser. What is friction? To find the answer, log on to www.kidscastradio.com.
Bet you didn't know this.
Exercising turkeys are advancing science. Researchers have been letting the birds run on treadmills to study how their muscles work. Bet you didn't know that.
Well, be back with more Kids Cast after this.
Drinking alcohol is a dangerous thing for teenagers to do. You can lose control of your actions and do things you wouldn't normally do. Sometimes you might not even remember what you did do. Your health and your life are put at serious risk. Please remember that the decisions you make now will affect the rest of your life. Be smart. Choose not to drink.
A message from the Missouri Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse, working for healthy bodies, safe communities.
Lighters are not children's toys. They are tools for grown-ups. They're not made for girls and boys.
More than 90,000 fires a year in the United States are started by children curious about fire, and 3,000 of them are injured every year by fire play. Teach your children that matches and lighters are tools for adults and not toys.
They can start a fire, blazing fire that destroys.
Did you want to be on KidsCast? Find out how at KidsCastRadio.com.
This is your Kids Cast Joke of the Week. What do you get when you cross a rabbit and a flea? Bugs Bunny.
Kids Wisdom. Never ask a 3-year-old to hold a tomato.
Hi again. There are always interesting events taking place, from cool school projects to athletic events to charity work. And sometimes, kids can explain them better than grown-ups. We'd like to hear newsworthy stories from your area. So how do you write a great news story? Listen to this report.
Writing a great news story is easy. All you have to do is remember 6 words. Who, what, where, when, why, and how. If you answer questions about your story using these words, you'll have all the information you need. When you start writing, make sure your first sentence has your most important information. It's your lead. Then, work on your supporting details. Keep your sentences short, and if you use what someone said, make sure you put it in quotations. Follow these simple guidelines, and you will always write great stories. Then, send them in to KidsCast by computer, or to 505 Hobbs Road, Jefferson City, Missouri, 65109. I'm Sally Sue, reporting for KidsCast.
You can learn more about writing the news and submitting your own story by heading to our website at www.kidscastradio.com. Then, check out this site.
At this site, you can get the inside scoop on the happenings at the White House. Since John Adams and Abigail Adams first arrived in 1800, You'll also find activities for kids of all ages. It comes to us from National Geographic. Just log on to www.nationalgeographic.com/White House. I'm Logan Moore, supporting for KidsCast.
That's it for this week. I'm Michael Cady for KidsCast. Adios.
KidsCast is brought to you by the Missouri Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse,
reminding you that underage drinking can have dangerous consequences.
Visit us online at KidsCastRadio.com.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
This WGNU News update is brought to you by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. I'm Peyton Colston. A St. Louis City emergency medical technician is among the latest casualties in Iraq. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reports Navy Reservist Christopher Walsh was killed by a roadside bomb Labor Day. Walsh was a 5-year veteran with the St. Louis City Fire Department. The 30-year-old man grew up in Shawnee, Kansas, and came to the St. Louis area after graduating from high school. In Centralia, Illinois, a man is accused of killing his stepfather. Authorities say 23-year-old John Lundgren stabbed Roger Brown to death Monday morning. Lundgren's charged with first-degree murder. A St. Charles County woman is dead following an ATV accident. Police say 51-year-old Kathleen Vetterot was a passenger on an ATV when it struck a cable along Washington Road Monday night. The driver, a 42-year-old man, was treated at an area hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. In North St. Louis, the murder of a teenager remains under investigation. Police say 17-year-old Cleophas Robinson was found shot to death Monday night along the 5,000 block of Emerson. No arrests have been made in that case. And finally this hour, a suspect's being sought in connection with an accident that injured a motorcycle rider in North St. Louis. Authorities say 36-year-old man collided with a vehicle along North Grand and Hebert Street yesterday afternoon. The driver of the vehicle fled the scene. The motorcycle rider remains in critical condition. And that's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. You can help a child excel in school through September. Donate school supplies to KidSmart by dropping them off at your local Toyota dealer's service center. Toyota service centers, now that's a smart choice. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Centrum Silver. Eastbound 44 at Murdoch, there's an injury accident. Two left lanes are closed. Traffic is backed up through Elm. Eastbound 70 at Bryan Road and T.R. Hughes. That traffic's building. Eastbound 40 from Timberlake to Mason. Look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 at 55 Marshall. We've got slow traffic, and then again, Butler Hill all the way to 270. Expect some heavy volume going on there. Westbound 270 from West Florissant to Graham Hanley. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 at Illinois 3 and the Canal Bridge over on the east side. Look for slow traffic there. Eastbound 40 from Hanley all the way to Laclede Station. Very heavy volume going on there. Westbound 5570 onto the Poplar Street Bridge. It is slow. It is slow on the King Bridge. And it is also slow on the Eads Bridge at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Centrum Silver. Centrum Silver multivitamins have essential nutrients, which emerging science suggests, along with a healthy diet, may help support heart health. That is a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's weather, mostly sunny today with a high around the lower 80s. This evening, mostly clear with a low around 60. Thursday and Friday, mostly sunny both days. Highs in the mid-80s both days. Currently, we have 59 degrees. It's time now for more of the award-winning wake-up call with your host, Liz Brown. It's St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs as well. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can you discern? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can you discern?
It is time for us to use our power.
give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that below me.
Revolution in the air, tell me, brother, how can
you listen? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long history.
This is St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly in-depth look at developments affecting the education of our children.
Welcome, welcome. Peter Downs, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good this morning. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Huh? I don't know, Peter. Seems to me that folks are finally coming around to what we have been saying for years. It seems like folks are finally getting what we said. And I can't help but think. And you tell me if this is correct or not. But when we went up to Jefferson City and we protested.
Three years ago.
We went up to Jefferson City and we protested in front of Kent King's office. We had signs with Kent King's name on it. 300 plus people went up to Jefferson City and we said, do not waive or retract the waiver that you gave to Bill Roberti because he wasn't a superintendent. In order for him to sit in that seat, Kent King had to waive waive his requirement that he get superintendent certification. If you do this, if you don't retract this waiver, this district will lose accreditation, this district will lose points. We gave a litany of things that would happen in this district. And what's Kent King saying 3 years later?
He's saying that this district has kept losing points in its annual performance review, and he's going to recommend pulling the accreditation from it.
As a result of the last 3 years of performance, right?
Right, right. Every year for the last, let me pull back a minute. What he says, the preliminary data says it'll lose points again this year. It lost points last year, and it lost points the year before. So it lost points based on the year of Roberti. It lost points based on the year where there was nobody in the superintendency.
Nobody in charge. Mm-hmm.
And the preliminary data says it's losing more points from the year of Williams. And after 3 years of losing points, it'll be down somewhere in the 20s. You know, it was at 64 when Cleveland Hammonds left. We're 2 points away from full accreditation. It'll be down somewhere in the 20s now.
Jesus.
And he's going to recommend, he says, you know, that's enough. He's going to recommend now pulling the accreditation this fall.
So what does that mean?
Not too much initially.
Mm-hmm.
It means they're keeping they're supposed to keep a closer eye mm-hmm. on the district. And after a year, there'd be a recommendation as to whether to take over the district or not.
Mm-hmm.
So with Wellston, as you recall, they pulled accreditation from Wellston a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went a whole year and looked at how it did and said, no, you aren't doing the job, and we're going to take you over.
So that was about a three-year process after they pulled the accreditation mm-hmm. of it.
Right, a couple of years, two to 3 years.
And it's my understanding that Wellston has improved quite a bit in the 1 year of this, and that there was talk about pulling it back, I think. I think what we see happening in Wellston, what we've seen is happening in Wellston at least about 4 or 5 months ago, that there was a path towards getting their accreditation or getting from under the state takeover.
Okay.
So it appears that is something that can be done, but at least we're probably about 3 years away from that. What does that mean for kids that go in the district, the kids that graduate from Metro High School, if they graduate from a district that has had its accreditation pulled? What does that mean?
Well, that's a bad mark on their transcripts when they apply to college. It's, oh, the kid got all A's, but it's an unaccredited school district.
Mm. Oh, we need to talk more about this. We'll be back. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. This is St. Louis Public Schools Watch. Stay with us. You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears. Where else? Where else indeed? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, treadmills, tools, tractors. How about those little Hot Wheel cars? You need to get on down to Sears, folks. They have everything that you need to make your house a home, to make your home a palace. Get on down to Sears at Union and Natural Bridge. My name is Liz Brown. When you talk to Jerome Williams and you get that wonderful customer service, because that's how they do it there, you tell them I told you to.
Top three reasons I'm man enough to not do this project myself. Number three, I've come to realize I can't do everything, and I'm okay with that. Number two, there is no shame in enjoying the fruits of someone else's labor. And number one, I know who to call.
The Home Depot can get it installed, guaranteed. Like that new floor you've been wanting. It's easy. Just come see us at the store. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. See store for license numbers and information on the Home Depot guarantee policy.
Criminal justice is one of America's fastest growing career fields. With a degree in criminal justice, you can pursue exciting entry-level opportunities. At the ITT Tech School of Criminal Justice, they teach you the fundamentals of the criminal justice system. Classes meet just a few days a week, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call now for an ITT Tech brochure. 1-800-851-4499. 1-800-851-4499.
Not offered at every campus. Check the ITT Tech for a list of programs offered.
Good morning, Miss Liz. This is Amir Mahoney calling you from LaCree School, second grade, from 209. Miss Liz, I had a good time with you. Miss Liz, our class is watching Roots. Kuta Kinte knows his roots. His mother name is Dita, and his father name is Amaru. Kinte has dignity. Have a good summer. This is Amir Muhammad from room 209, where dignity reigns supreme. Love you.
Love you.
What a wonderful.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Peter, welcome back. Let's go through some of the things that just to refresh the audience's memory, when we take a look back at the 3 years of Bill Roberti, mystery superintendents in there, and then Craig Williams, who didn't have a superintendent's license either when he took the gig. Some of the things that occurred in that three-year period where we went from 60-plus points probably down to 20-something points, what were some of the things that occurred during that time, like the Lynn Spampinato effect?
Okay, well, before we get to Lynn Spampinato, mm-hmm. some of the things that occurred to lose some of the points mm-hmm. in previous years, there was a cutback in counseling at high schools. There was elimination of the program to keep dropouts back into the school system. One of the cutbacks so you have a higher dropout rate, and I think we've discussed this before, the number of kids, the percentage of the student body that's dropping out in high school really doubled over just a couple of years. And don't we have to add
to that too the thing about the vouchers for buses, the passes for buses? Kids couldn't get to school. They made it impossible for or difficult for a lot of kids to get to school.
Well, But under Roberta, they instituted the thing of using metro buses instead of school buses. So you had to get passes to get to school. We've had people called in on the show talking about how difficult it was for their child to get the passes.
And that principal.
And then last year, they took them away from some of the kids.
Yeah, they used them as a punishment tool. That your punishment is, we're not going to give you a pass to get home, or we're not going to give you a pass to get to school. So the dropout rate rose accordingly.
Right. There's a lot of encouragement not to come to school. And the thing with cutting counseling, and in fact, they cut out the director of counseling. So each school is like a little island, and the counselors are overwhelmed. But one of the effects that means is colleges, agencies that give scholarships, they had no one to contact in the public school system.
Jesus.
So you didn't have this pathway of information to kids about where they could go to college, what programs were available, what money was available. You know, all that was cut out, you know, so cutting out those opportunities. And so, yes, the percentage of kids going to college dropped.
And that impacts on our accreditation.
That, yes, yes. That one of the biggest, most controversial programs was related to Lynn Spampinato. And it started a little before, started under Roberti, when board authorized a group of teachers, parents, and administrators to evaluate reading textbooks for elementary school. They had six different textbooks, series of textbooks, kindergarten through fifth grade for teaching reading they looked at, and say which one they thought was best. And they came up with a recommendation, went to the board, and Roberti was outraged, really. He said, the federal government would never approve this. Of course, he has no background in education.
How
so,
would he know?
So he's an expert, right?
Right.
He doesn't know anything, so he's an expert, right?
Right?
So he got the board to rescind that committee. Less than 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, Lynn Spampinato came in as the chief academic officer. She had just been chased out of Colorado. Mm-hmm. Lost her superintendent's gig there.
Mm-hmm.
His teachers and parents and other schools were so outraged at what she was doing there. And so the school board here welcomed her with open arms.
Of course, because she was run out of the town on a rail. So sounds like someone for St. Louis.
That's right. That's right.
According to Francis Slay. Okay.
So she was put in charge of academics in the district, and she said, we're going to put this textbook in. Yeah, I know everybody in this district looked at it and said, this is the absolute worst of all the choices, but it's the one I want. We're going to put it in there. And we aren't even going to wait for the beginning of a semester, beginning of a year. We're going to do it right in the middle of the year, take time out of teaching, pull all your old textbooks out. You got to throw them away. I don't want anything old left in there for you to look at. And we'll put this one in and forget the first 10 weeks of teaching you've done. We're going to pretend this is, even though this is mid-November, we're going to pretend it's the first day of school.
And we're going to give you an hour's worth of training on how to do this.
That's right. We'll give you a handful of minutes here of training on how to do it.
Okay.
And she said, because we're doing this in the middle of the year, the first year, don't expect any big results. But by the end of the second year, by golly, you'll see those results shoot up. Look, in Dallas, they went up from 20 to 80%. In Detroit, they went from 20 to 80%. That's what's going to happen here.
And where was Lynn Spampinato when the results came out a few weeks ago?
Oh, she bailed on this district last December, so about 4 months before the testing on it.
Okay.
She bailed. She took, I think it was a $20,000 a year pay cut to go to Pittsburgh.
Mm. So that's one of the things that has impacted our scores.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So there's this problem. It was not just a new textbook, but it was enforced in a very authoritarian fashion. Teachers and principals talked about the open court police, the people representing Lynn Spampinato. I would go around from schools in a very, very petty fashion, saying, you got a picture of a letter. It's 1 inch away from where it should be. You aren't holding the book in the right position. It's 9:30. You should be on page 5 instead of still on page 4.
Jesus.
So it's a very rigid schedule, very rigid presentation, very rigid responses. They give sample questions and what responses are supposed to be.
And we also discover some racism in the book as well.
Yes.
The whole monkey piece that was in there.
Right. The first big controversy was a mother brought in a section from the first grade.
That's right.
Open court. HIP.
That's right.
Where HIP was a monkey.
Exactly.
And
they were black.
The parents were
black.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And got that pulled. And You know, Lynn Stampinato and Open Court were all said, oh, you know, nobody has ever said it's racist before, you know, and it's like, yeah, right. But, yeah, so they cut it out. They had instructions to say, all right, cut this one out of the book.
And in fact, there had been a challenge of Open Court pictures before in California. Parents had talked about the racism in the program and pictures and stuff before. So this was the type of program that they brought to St. Louis. And their answer was they just took, we're told that they took a razor and cut those particular pages out of the book. We were told
We were told. But that was, would have been 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Those are books, they call them consumables. You get new books every year. Mm. I don't know if they cut them out last year or not. Mm. But yeah, so this Open Court promised big gains. Testing comes. We've got a new map test. It's rewritten. It's rewritten to make it easier, particularly at the upper grades. But it's rewritten because the state legislature 3 years ago said, we're being judged in comparison to other states, and if you compare how kids result on our MAP test with how they result in the National Assessment of Educational Progress, they don't do as well on the state test as they do on the national one. So we want you to bring the state test in line with the national one.
And this is because kids all over the districts, we're talking about Clayton, everybody, they weren't faring well on the MAP test.
That's right.
I mean, that every superintendent went up there to talk to Jefferson City except for the superintendent sitting in the city of St. Louis. Roberti was nowhere to be found when everybody else went up there to talk about and to complain about the MAP test scores.
I can't vouch that every single other superintendent went up, but yes, a lot. There's from across the state, you know, went up to testify in the state legislature and to talk to legislatures and talk to the Department of Education about it.
And the city of St. Louis wasn't there.
And they've been missing in action for the last couple of years on education issues.
Mm.
So, state rewrote it. They tested it a year before last, rolled out brand new MAP test last year. Results were just released last Friday publicly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, districts and King knew what they were before Friday, but they released public Friday. And St. Louis's results tumbled way down. Now it's given every year now, so you have to compare year to year.
Mm-hmm.
2005, communication arts was given to third grade students, and 36% of students scored proficient or advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, 2006, was down to 25%. So a drop almost of one third. Math was given fourth grade every year until last year was given to all the grades from 3 to 8. So fourth grade math, very similar, 36% proficient or advanced. And it was down to 2006. It fell down to 20%.
Jesus.
So these are huge drops on a test that was supposed to be easier.
Mm.
The Kent King, the Department of Education or the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, they'll say because it's a different test, they'll say, well, you can't compare 1 year to the next. But then they do so.
Mm.
And Kent King, in his remarks in a press release he sent out, statewide, he crowed about how we had an increase in the number of proficient and advanced scoring kids on the test, as we expected because of the changes we made in the test. So they didn't expect the drop in St. Louis. It was a really significant drop. And I think that is a big part of why he is saying now that he's going to recommend to the board taking accreditation away from St. Louis.
Now, what does that do in terms of the state takeover? Does this have any bearing on, or will this have any impact on the move by Francis Slay and a handful of other discontents, malcontents out there, to take over to have a state takeover of the board?
I think it's related to it. I think this is a move that has to be made before the state can take over.
Mm-hmm.
This is the only way. Well, the state can take over for only two reasons. That if the district loses accreditation, or it stops paying its bills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, essentially it says, closing the doors, you're not going to pay our bills anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This district is paying its bills. That's not an issue. So losing accreditation starts a process in place where the state can take over.
And we're going to take a break. We'll get to some of your calls and comments when we come back. This is the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. I'm Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. Stay with us.
We'll be right back.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Eastbound 44 at Murdoch, injury accident, two left lanes are closed. Traffic's back up through Big Bend. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road to T.R. Hughes at Traffic's Building. Northbound 270 at 55 in Marshall. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound 44, or eastbound 40, excuse me, from Timberlake Manor all the way to Mason. Look for slow traffic as well. Northbound 55 at Mattis and 270. It is slow. Westbound 270 from West Florissant all the way to Graham Hanley. Look for slow traffic as well. Westbound 270 from Illinois 3 all the way in the Canal Bridge. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 at Hanley and Laclede Station. Look for very heavy volume going on there. And all your approaches on the Poplar Street Bridge are stacking up this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealer. You can help a child excel in school through September. Donate school supplies to KidSmart by dropping them off at your local Toyota dealer's service center. Toyota Service Centers, now that's a smart choice. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s for this evening, mostly clear with a low around 60. For Thursday, mostly sunny with a high in the lower 80s. And for Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-80s. Currently, we have 59 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 59. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call, St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs. That's up next. Take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Mark Glass. Tune in after the 5 o'clock news every Friday for What's New at the Movies on AM 920. I sit through the bad ones so you don't have to and give you an early heads up on the good stuff. So for advice on getting the best mileage on your entertainment budget, join me, Mark Glass, for What's New at the Movies, Friday afternoons after the 5 o'clock news on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues and the movies that matter most to you.
This is Lloyd Sloan, the Sloan Ranger, defending truth, fighting bad guys, and sometimes wearing a mask. A little history, a little entertainment, current events, a lot of good fun, and healthy debate. Call me, argue. If you're wrong, I will disarm you. But have no fear. The Sloan Ranger never shoots to kill. That's weekdays 5 to 6 on WGNU.
Does your life need to be energized? Are you in need of some direction and clarity? Is it time to make a change?
Tune in to Sort It Out with professional organizers Lori and Claire, Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m., and we'll share with you everything we know from our expertise in organizing, be it life, home, or business, to us motivating and empowering you to go after your dreams and goals.
We are known as the dynamic duo, and we can rescue you from your organizing challenges. We want to encourage you to get real with your life and regain control.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Liz.
Good morning. Who's this?
This is Dontra Busby calling you from Laclede School, Zeki Gray Room 209. Thank you, Miss Liz, for the gift from Africa that you gave to everyone. We are watching a movie. The movie is called Ruth. In the movie, the setting is in a village called Jufurey. And Ruth was voted by Alex Haley. Miss Liz, we had our Awards Day program, and I received an achievement trophy. Have a good summer. Dr. Busby from 209 for Dignity Reign Supreme. Love you.
Love you. Thank you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. Let me get to a caller or two here. David.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. And how you doing, Peter?
Great. How you doing?
Good. Look, I have a quick comment and a question. First, my comment, I think when you start looking at this from a collective way, you can see across the nation that there has been a well-orchestrated effort to destroy public schools. in communities where the student body is heavily African. And one of the things that I think is really disturbing, when you look at the how it's so different, you know, the creation of charter schools in areas where black children are, looking at the area of Kansas City and St. Louis, where there's a different formula for a state takeover, where the mayors of those cities will ultimately make the decision on how the school is run. And my question to both of you are this. Since here the black community, black politicians, black roundtable, black clergy, many of these people have played a active role as collaborators against black children. What do you think should be done by the public by that?
What should be done to those entities?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll take a look, take a comment on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. In terms of the impact of those organizations, how would you assess the impact of the Black Leadership Roundtable on what has gone down educationally?
Well, I think that his comments were very perceptive. Mm-hmm. I think that they're very good, and he sounds like he knows more about what's going on nationally than I do. But certainly, I would say here in St. Louis, there has been a really planned effort to destroy public education in St. Louis.
Without question.
The groups he mentioned, Black Leadership Roundtable, certain black politicians, have given cover to that effort. I think in the last, certainly in the last 2 years, after 1 year of it, and I know you've been active in this, I don't think the public trusts them. I think the very fact that their candidates lost elections in the last two rounds of elections indicates that, you know, maybe they're still giving cover with some people, but a lot of people recognize the role they're actually playing.
And I question, I question entirely the depth of their influence. Anyway, they are used by entities like the Slay's administration as evidence that there is some sort of support with the black community. That's what they're used as. When you go to the black community and you ask, if you pull five people, black people off the street and you ask them who's the Black Leadership Roundtable, who are they, what are they, most people wouldn't know who they were. Most people couldn't say anything about them. They are used as a tool, as a PR tool, to say something about the decisions that have been made with respect to our education, with respect to our school system that are not true. I think that the cover that you describe also goes to the cover for Francis Slay, who wants to use them to say that black people are on board with this because they have the word black in their name. You know, it's Black Leadership Roundtable, so therefore I've got black support. And again, you know, we look at the voters' response to them. The voters have said no to. People gave them an opportunity, not because they were Black Leadership Roundtable, but because they had the most moneyed campaign out there the first time around, and when given an opportunity to comment on that, the chance that they gave Darnetta Klingsdale, the public said, oh, no, we don't want you back.
That's
because
right.
We've seen what you can do. And let's get to, and I want to get to some other callers, but let's get back to this Kent King piece because I think this is important. What is Kent King saying about Diana Borisow? In terms of after all this, okay, oh, God, I think we're going to have to pull the accreditation. Now, well, if you had done what we told you not to do, you know, we wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be in this position.
We wouldn't
That's
be
right.
in this
That's
position right.
right
now. It is your fault. It is Kent King's fault. We told him 3 years ago, don't allow this guy to be in there. So what is he saying now about Diana Borisow?
Well, he had, from everything I've heard from him, he was very clear and repeated again and again. Let Diana Borisow do her job. He kept saying, don't make any more superintendent changes.
Mm-hmm.
Keep this one there. Don't even talk about making superintendent changes. Keep this team in there and let them work.
And let's talk about some of the things that have happened while this team has been in here. Student attendance. Talk about that.
Student attendance. We ended up, last week was first week of school. Friday had over 90% attendance. Had the average for the week was over 84%. Numbers are hard to come by for last year, but
you think? can't find Craig Williams' resume. So I'm not surprised we can't find the numbers either.
But Johnny Little, who was their public information officer last year, said the number for last year was about 80% was average attendance. So it would be significantly higher attendance this year than last year.
How could that be? What are some of the things that you think that could account for account for that?
Well, I don't know. The main thing, I think, you know, the lot of teachers I've talked to, and I actually marched with teachers in Labor Day parade on Monday, and teachers came up and said, you know, you're doing the right thing. This is the first time in several years that we feel hope for the district. We're actually excited about things moving forward. And I think the teachers and other employees, they talk to their neighbors. They talk to the people on their block, and they talk to their friends across the city. And I think it's that message that there's actually hope this year. Things are moving forward.
And didn't we also have, prior to this, the start of the school year, we also had an election that changed the makeup of the school board? And I think that people are also...
That seems like so long ago.
It does seem like a million years ago, doesn't it? But it was only a couple of months ago. So only a few months ago. So maybe people are feeling hopeful about... if they saw something good in the first day, they're feeling hopeful that it'll still be good 3 or 4 months from now because that there are people in charge on the board that are going to be consistent with the decision making. And maybe there's also this feeling of there won't be arbitrary decisions made in the middle of the school year to start a whole new book, you know, a whole new way to start teaching kids, that there won't be this shotgun, you know, this closed eye shotgun approach to education. Maybe that's part of the encouragement that people are feeling to get into the schools, maybe?
Well, it could be. I'm one of those new board members elected just a few months ago, and there are two of us who are parents of children in the district, and I think that is a change for a lot of people, that they know, all right, there are people on the board whose kids are in the district, and they know if they make any sudden changes, it's going to have an effect on
their
kids.
Children. And one of the things that I'm hearing, though, the concerns that I'm hearing out here after the first week of school, overcrowding.
I hear a lot about that. There's a real issue and a lot of concern with overcrowded classrooms and some overcrowded schools all across the district. There's been that issue for a few years now. I think it's
closed all those schools, though.
Yes,
Bill Roberti closed all those schools.
Yes, and since then that's been a real issue, and it's affecting more. You know, there's some other schools it's affecting. Metro parents have been loud about that because. Williams insisted on letting a lot more kids into Metro than it could really hold. Mm-hmm. And after he did it, he said, oh, gee, it's overcrowded. What are we going to do now? It's a real issue across the district. There are comments on some of the parent email lists where parents email each other back and forth. There's some comments of, well, the principals are saying they really think the district is listening to their concerns this year and trying to do something. I know in some areas, classes were really overcrowded. They've tried to get an additional teacher down there. We still have a very tight financial situation. So another thing, the main response that's been going on, and I don't think it's an ideal response, but it's probably better than overcrowded classrooms, is what they call split classrooms. You might have a school where you have overcrowded fourth-grade classrooms. Maybe you have, initially you have 31, 32, 33 kids in each fourth grade. But you only have maybe 21 in each third grade. So you rearrange it so that you have one classroom that is a half third grade, half fourth grade, in order to get all the numbers down into the 20s, into the mid-20s. I recognize that's hard for that teacher, having kids at two grade levels to teach. It's not ideal, and we have to look long range, really, at, all right, how can we get the numbers down from being near the state maximum to get them down to the state recommended level for kids per classroom? How much money will that take, and how do we get that money? Is it available here now, or do we have to raise more money?
Have you gotten your money from Francis Slay? Has Francis Slay released that $4 million for the schools?
I don't know. I don't know.
He's
what
still
that
holding. I mean, he could still be holding
he
that.
He could
hostage.
Still be holding that hostage.
But I heard that he went up and he shook the hand of Diana Barroso at the Labor Day parade.
Labor Day parade. He came up and he shook Diana Barroso's hand and.
So maybe that means that he'll start talking to her.
Okay. I won't hold my breath.
I won't hold my breath on that either, Maria.
Good morning, Liz. How are you this morning?
Outstanding.
I missed your court answer to what does it mean about us losing accreditation?
You missed Peter's answer to that?
Yes,
the
I
impact
did.
Okay. And we'll let Peter address that after we take this break.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye. We're going to take a break. This is the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. I am Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Wake-up call, global news update. Dateline, Khartoum. The 7,000 troops of the African Union who are on a peacekeeping mission in Darfur have been ordered by the government of Sudan to get out. Sudan says they will be replaced by 10,000 of its own soldiers. The Sudanese Foreign Ministry Office says the African Union had already said the peacekeeping force could not operate after September, so the process is just being speeded up. Human rights groups are expressing deep concern that the innocent people of the region could be subject now to genocide because the government is already believed to be supporting the militant group called the Janjaweed, who have killed thousands in the Darfur crises. And Dateline Washington. The Bush administration has filed legal briefs that could wind up putting a stop to school integration. The White House is choosing to stand by white parents in school districts in Seattle and Louisville who are claiming that guidelines for integration discriminate against white students and violate the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. Civil rights groups say if such arguments are upheld, it could reverse most of the gains made since the 1954 Brown v. Board of Education decision. Now, 2 years ago, President Bush made a special visit to Topeka, Kansas to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Brown decision. And he even said in his speech at that time that laws against racial discrimination must be vigorously enforced in education and housing and hiring and public accommodations. The Louisville case has a white parent claiming her son could not attend an elementary school closest to his home because district guidelines called for at least 15% black enrollment and not more than 50%. In the Seattle case, a group of white parents have sued the district because their children did not get accepted to their first high school choice due to their race. The district had adopted integration guidelines 8 years ago to overcome self-segregation by housing patterns. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Want to help local charities and nonprofit groups? Want to have a great time doing it? Then head down to Patty Long's, 9th Street Abbey in Soulard this Friday from 5 to 9 p.m. for a party on the patio. Every week, a different organization receives a portion of the proceeds and all the tips that their volunteer servers can bring in. There's a featured drink each week, free hors d'oeuvres, and live music. Summer fun and helping others has never been so easy. Party on the patio with Patty Long's 9th Street Abbey all summer long. This week's party benefits Boys Town and Girls Town of Missouri.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Liz. This is Casey Marshall calling you from Laclede School, room 209. Miss Liz, I love the African necklace. I wore it to Red Lobster. I wish I could go with you to Ghana. Miss Liz, you are the best and one of a kind. Miss Liz, this is Casey Marshall from room 209 where dignity reigns supreme.
Hey, baby.
Have a great summer. Love you.
Love you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back. Welcome back. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. And Peter, let's talk about the call of the last caller's question about the loss of accreditation. First of all, we haven't lost accreditation. That's what Peter King is Kent King is talking about.
Yes, he's saying that he I think he pretty well telescoped that he's going or telegraphed that he's going to this fall recommend pulling accreditation.
Now it's up
to the State Board of Education. They're the ones who make the decision.
So what does that mean if it happens?
If it happens, I think
how long of a process would it be?
Well, we'd lose accreditation immediately.
Mm-hmm.
The district would still be run by the school board. Teachers would still have their contracts. Kids would still be going to the same schools. There isn't any big upheaval that comes with it. I think there is some small effect with kids who would graduate from high schools. They graduate from high schools. They submit their transcripts to colleges for admission, and the transcript would say, you know, this district is unaccredited.
Mm-hmm.
And that has some effect, but also, I mean, there are other things that weigh into high school admission. So that would be one amongst a whole pot of full of things. But what it does is it sets in motion a process whereby the state would review the district status every year and decide at the end of 1 year whether or not they want to take over the district. If they don't, you know, they could decide, oh, you're making enough progress, we're going to give you provisional accreditation again. Or they could say, we're going to leave you unaccredited and give you another year, so you know, things look positive, but another year, see what's going on. Or they could say, as they did at Wellston at one point, no, nothing good is happening, at least
in
the direction we want,
and
we're going to take it over.
And
now, no one really knows what takeover for St. Louis is, because as the earlier caller mentioned, it's a different law for St. Louis than it is for the rest of the state.
And there isn't any energy in the state house to take over the district. Nobody really wants to take over the largest district in the state because it makes the state look bad. I mean, this is not a good PR campaign for the state to say that the largest district in the state of Missouri is taken over, except for, and this is an important point, that people need to also appreciate the PR campaign that is going to go on when this happens, and people need to gird themselves and be responsive to respond back to the PR campaign that is going to go on. If the district loses its accreditation, then there will be those that want vouchers. There will be those that want charter schools, that they will jump into the PR mix and say, this is the reason for, and we have a governor that wants the privatization of schools. So they will use that as an opportunity. They will attempt to use that as an opportunity for pushing these other failed policies or practices on the district. So I think it's important for people to gird themselves, to put in their minds a mental poster of, it's your fault that this happened. It is Kent King's fault. It is the state of Missouri's fault for allowing this experiment. If we lose accreditation, it's because of the experimentation that took place.
Oh, absolutely.
The privatization and the experimentation that took place.
Yes, and I think you hit on what I think will be the biggest effect.
Because
it would be probably November, December, quite possibly December when the state board would make a decision. So if you lose accreditation, then it's right before the state legislature goes into session. Mayor Slay and Governor Blunt have both been pushing for vouchers for St. Louis for a couple of years.
And charter schools.
And they would latch onto this, and this would be part of their big push. See, the school district in St. Louis is failing. You need to give kids the chance to go to private schools with state money, which is what vouchers are all about. Never mind that it was Slay was the architect of this failure.
And this is the proof in the pudding of what happens when privatization is brought into public schools. Because nearly every decision that was made when Slay was in control of the district was about giving out unbidded contracts contracts to private people, to bring in people that had no experience in education, and privatizing, saying that we're going to bring this business model into the St. Louis public schools with Bill Roberti. We're going to pay somebody that's never had anything to do with education $6 million. It was a privatization experiment that failed. And I mean, this is the best example. I think that that's really where the PR campaign has to be, characterizing what has happened in the St. Louis public schools as what happens when private companies take a hold of a public school district. You lose dozens and dozens of accreditation points, and the school finally loses accreditation completely.
Yeah, and I think there's no really clear illustration that it was about those private agendas instead of education than an article that was in the Post-Dispatch Sunday, where it talked to corporate representatives, mm-hmm. such as Richard Fleming from RCGA and other mm-hmm. corporations, saying, well, gee, we aren't going to give any money to the school district while this board is in there. I mean, we won't even give money to anybody who works with kids in the school district while this board is in there. You know, these are the people who funded the election campaigns for Slay's candidates. Mm-hmm. They're the people who funneled money through philanthropies in order to do PR mm-hmm. for the last election campaign.
And they lost significantly.
And they're making very clear now that it was never about the kids for them. It was mm-hmm. never about education, because they said very clearly they aren't going to give any money that goes directly to programs for the kids, because they don't control the school board now.
And you need to juxtapose that. I mean, we also need to juxtapose what RCGA said about they're not giving any money. It is fascinating that when Slay was in control of this board, the real people that actually were giving money to the school said, we can't give money to Slay's board.
That's right.
Because we have seen what Slay's board, and now we're seeing those people reach back into the district. We're seeing corporate America, Bank of America, has allowed one person to be on leave in order to come in and to help this district. We're seeing a different type of, the type of corporate involvement in schools that's really about the kids. This after Slay has lost control of this board.
Right. We're seeing people in corporations saying, we offered to help before. We wanted to help. And we were told, we don't need you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now,
Or they wasted our money.
Or we're just batting our head against the wall because we're trying to get something going and not getting any help at all.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're getting help. Now the district has open arms saying, if you want to help, we want you here.
And I think that the proof of that is the 90% attendance at the end of the week last week, that people are moving on this hope. And also, turning this district around is not going to be that difficult, Peter. It's not rocket science to fix this district. It's books, it's teachers, it's children, it's parents, and it's a leadership in place that has experience and gives a darn about whether or not this district succeeds or not.
Well, that's the superintendent, Dana Borsa, uses almost the exact phrase, because she's heard her talk to principals and teachers and other groups in the school system, and she's saying it's not rocket science. You know, teaching kids, getting performance and faith tests, that's not rocket science. And this district, the people in the district have shown before that they can do it.
They did it under Hammonds.
They did it under Hammonds. 2001, 2005, they were raising
test
scores.
Two points away. Points away from it. So it's not rocket science. What it has to have, though, is there has to be consistency in leadership, experience in the leadership team, and also allowing them to be there for more than a half a minute. One of the things that's going to factor into this, Peter, though, is an election. We're going to have another school board election coming up in April, though, too.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I suspect that one of the PR campaigns is going to be also to use, if there is the removal of accreditation, they're going to attempt to rephrase this, to lie about what happened before.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they'll be, just because of the timing, the way the state works, they'll say, oh, well, see, it was pulled in the fall, so it was the fault of whoever was in power in the fall.
Exactly.
When it's really based on what happened the year before.
Absolutely. And 3 years before that.
Yes.
Mary, quickly, please.
Yes, how does the Teach for America teachers fit into the formula?
Very good, very good. Can't Teach for America. Are those teachers, is there still, because that was another one of Francis Slay's thing that cost the district all kinds of money.
There's still Teach for America
mm-hmm.
People in the district. There was a contract that is still not over.
Mm-hmm.
There were contracted for a certain number of teachers. I understand we actually used fewer teachers than contracted for this year. And got some of those teachers alternative placements in districts in the county that wanted them.
Very good. Very, very good. Peter Downs, when's the next school board meeting?
a week from, well, in 6 days, a week from yesterday is the administrative meeting. 2 weeks from yesterday is the general public meeting.
Excellent. We will see you next Wednesday. Thank you so much.
See you then.
All right.
And pull it out 6 inches. There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound at the below, at the low knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can
but the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Maybe tomorrow, certainly not today. NASA is postponing the launch of the shuttle Atlantis. It's due to a fuel cell problem. Spokesman Bruce Buckingham says, hey, it's just part of the job.
The crew takes it in stride. They know that there's a lot of work to be done before they get on the vehicle, so I'm sure that they were understanding, if not disappointed.
Next launch window tomorrow around 11 a.m. Eastern time. A changing of the guard in Iraq, or at least of the commander. The nation's new prime minister will assume control of one division this week, taking on more in the months to come. Major General William Caldwell is spokesman for the multinational force in Baghdad.
It's the one event that puts the prime minister directly in the operational control of his military forces, as his role is the commander-in-chief.
Officials, meanwhile, have reworked the number of bodies in the morgues in Iraq. Now they say more than 1,500 people have been killed in recent months, not 550, as reported not too long ago. There are a lot of people who work at high-tech company Intel who will soon be looking for jobs. The computer chip maker is eliminating 10,000 of them. Here's ABC's Alex Stone.
The cuts are expected to save Intel $2 billion next year alone. At one time, Intel dominated the chip market, but now more computer makers are deciding to go with Intel's rival, AMD.
Intel kind of has a history of being arrogant. If you're a smaller buyer, you know, they might push you around a little bit. They really have to draw those people back, and they have to get consumers back on their side.
Michael Canellos at CNET.com says a big blow came when Dell decided to start putting AMD chips in its PCs. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
Polygamous sect leader Warren Jeffs has hired a lawyer to defend him against felony sex charges involving an arranged marriage between an underage girl and an older man. Jeffs is due in court today in Utah. Well, they can't get a picture of the baby just yet, so photographers in Japan instead shoot a picture of newspaper headlines proclaiming the birth of Prince Kiko's son. The infant is third in line to the chrysanthemum throne. This is ABC News.
Behind every great fan are tasty snacks from Walmart. A football party takes will, determination, and some DiGiorno pizza. And when that pizza joins forces with Chex Mix, Campbell's Chunky Chili, and washed down by Pepsi and Diet Pepsi, you're guaranteed a touchdown. Fortunately, it's easy to get all the fuel for your appetizer machine at Walmart. Come to Walmart to stock up on all you need to feed your crowd at the Walmart price. Get plenty. It's game time.
Want to get to the next level of your career? Earn a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix. It's education designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn your degree in 2 to 3 years. At over 170 campuses, they offer programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix at 1-800-853-4433. Offer not valid in Tennessee. Programs vary by campus. That's 1-800-853-4433.
If there were any hard feelings between Rosie O'Donnell and Barbara Walters, you couldn't tell it yesterday on The View as the new co-host made her debut. Here's ABC's David Blaustein.
The View co-host Joy Behar says the first day with Rosie O'Donnell went swimmingly.
We meshed. We enjoyed each other. We had fun. Everybody fit in. It was good.
So good, O'Donnell and show creator Barbara Walters broke out in song after the show was over.
We may not go far, but sure as a star.
Walters says despite the change in casting, The View remains the same.
We never thought that the show had to change. We just felt we needed this new blood, and we got it.
What did O'Donnell think of her first day?
Really good, except I said the wrong name of Jessica Simpson's album.
David Blaustein, ABC News, New York.
West Nile virus may be more of a problem than doctors thought, at the very least a longer-lasting one. A new study says over a year after becoming infected, almost half of West Nile patients still have fatigue, memory problems, headache, depression, or tremors. Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Here's an update of WGNU News brought to you by Preparation H. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. The Missouri Highway Patrol is reporting 13 deaths on the roadways over the Labor Day weekend. That's up slightly compared to last year when 11 deaths were reported. Corporal Julie Serini says there were nearly 200 drunk driving arrests.
We also made 172 arrests for driving while intoxicated, and pretty comparable to last year where we arrested 177 driving while intoxicated subjects.
There was a total of 309 traffic crashes over the Labor Day weekend in Missouri. In other news this morning, a new Catholic high school is coming to St. Charles County next year. A groundbreaking ceremony was held yesterday for the Barra Academy High School. The $45 million facility will be located just off Highway 94 near Highway K. Classes are scheduled to begin September 5, 2007. And the annual MS-150 bike tour will get underway this weekend. Bernie Dicknight, owner of the Bicycle Fitness Center in Mount Vernon, got a head start yesterday when he began riding more than 200 miles to the event in Columbia, Missouri. Dicknight is expected to reach Columbia early tomorrow morning. The 2006 MS-150 bike tour will be held Saturday and Sunday. And that's an update of WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by Preparation H. Preparation H cream relieves burning, itching, and also gives you maximum strength pain relief on contact. It's the most complete Preparation H pain relief ever. I'm Peyton Colston reporting WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at the Sours traffic and weather. Sours traffic is sponsored by McDonald's. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road all the way to 79. Look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry and Marshall. You've got slow traffic there as well. Northbound 55 at 270. Look for slow traffic in the right lane approaching 270. Westbound 270 from West Florissant through Graham Hanley. Look for slow traffic there as well. Eastbound 44 between Lindbergh and River de Pere. Stop and go traffic due to bridge construction over River de Pere. And westbound 5570 onto the PSB, it is slow. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is slow. Northbound Route 3 is slow. And westbound Eastbridge traffic is slow into downtown. And Tesson Ferry at Kennerly, there's a report of an accident. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's restaurants. Start your day with a couple of McDonald's fresh brewed premium roast coffee and a warm, fresh-made breakfast sandwich, and bring your morning into a life-affirming focus. Wake up and smell your life. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Friday. Mostly sunny today, high in the lower 80s. This evening, mostly clear with a low around 60. Thursday, mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s, and Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-80s. Currently, we have 59 degrees. Lambert Field has 59 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Our power. Please do not beg folks for power.
going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how
can you defend? But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. I'm looking at the papers from today. And I've been looking at them for a while now. We're being told that the economy is while it's not, it's kind of like Bush's assessment of the war. We're safer, but we're not safe. The economy is like it's better, but it's not good. You know, kind of where we are. What the heck is that? What the heck is that? We need some straight talk here. We need some clarity about how we are doing economically. How is one of the world's wealthiest nation? How is the United States doing, and how are those of us who are not amongst the wealthiest people in this nation, how are we doing out here? Better, but it's not good? We need to talk about that. And to facilitate that conversation, I have joining me from Washington, D.C., Sylvia Allegretto, economist with the Economic Policy Institute. Sylvia, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So how are we doing?
Well, I think most Americans, most of the working stiffs in America are realizing that their paychecks have moved very little in this economic expansion that has been going on for about 5 years now. Of course, we hear a lot, like you're kind of alluding to, that, you know, the economy from, 40,000 feet, if you will, seems to look pretty good. And those are the numbers that we keep hearing. Oh, the economy is good. Why are people so dissatisfied? Well, the fact is, for those on the ground, things haven't been good, and this expansion that in some numbers and some overall economic indicators, such as, you know, output, gross domestic product, and productivity, you know, the productivity of our workforce, which is up quite a bit over the, you know, since 2000. But we see median household incomes for working folks that have fell, you know, considerably over the last 5 years.
And real income for people.
This is real income. So after you kind of take into consideration the uptick in inflation that has been going on, that we see, you know, since 2000, real, you know, median household incomes are down just over 5%, or in dollar terms, that's about $3,000 per household.
And aren't we also talking about, when they talk about productivity being up, mm-hmm. Americans are working more jobs.
Yeah, we have productivity. There are some Americans, certainly. We have a large contingent workforce. People are working two jobs or working part-time or working as contract workers and temporary workers. But we do have one of the most, you know, productive, hard-working, you know, workers in the world.
But we take fewer vacations than anybody else. We have lowest paid vacation of any other countries.
That's
right. This comes at a cost.
Yeah, so if you do a comparison across countries, and I've done a comparison in our newly released book on Labor Day, The State of Working America, you see in the international comparison chapter that, you know, looking at the 20 top developed countries in the world, that the U.S. does, the only one that doesn't have a mandated vacation for its workers, and also, you know, other things in these European economies that, you know, a lot of people kind of, you know, don't really have time to talk about, don't really want to talk about, don't think that they have good policies, and many people think that our more market-based economy is the better way to go, but a lot of those economies, we could learn a lot from those economies, such as the fact that they are all they all have some, you know, kind of universal health care, which really helps not only their populations, because they all have access to insurance, but it helps their businesses be more competitive, where a lot of our businesses have a competitive disadvantage because they have to worry about providing health care.
And we're going to talk more about that. We're talking about the State of Working America 2006-2007 with Sylvia Allegretto, an economist with the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us for more of this conversation.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen, letting you know my show will be on every Thursday from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. Yeah, I'll make you think. You may find yourself saying, oh my God, it burns, it burns. It only hurt for a minute. See you then.
Everything the engineer would move. One day the engineer wanted a bite to eat. He let the monkey sitting on the...
Hello?
Erica, got your sweats on, girl? Today's speed walking day.
Oh, I gotta take my mom to the doctor.
Erica, your mom is in Georgia.
Dorothy, you're breaking up.
Did I mention that we'll be slowing down when we pass that basketball court where the fine brothers play?
I heard that.
I knew you would.
Just give me a minute to put on some makeup.
Sorry, you're breaking up.
Even when exercise is the last thing on your mind, don't give in to excuses. Your sisters can provide the motivation and support you need to eat right, get active, and reduce your risk of cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. With the power of sisterhood, there's just no excuse not to live a healthier life. For more information, go to everydaychoices.org. Brought to you by the American Cancer Society, the American Diabetes Association, the American Heart Association, the Ad Council, and this station.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I've got a hard road to travel and a rough, rough way to go. And it's a hard road to travel and a rough, rough way to go. But I can't turn back. My heart is fixed. My mind's made up. I'll never stop in my face.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This morning we are talking to Sylvia Allegretto. She is an economist with the Economic Policy Institute, joining us from Washington, D.C. And we're talking about the state of working America 2006 and 2007. This is the couple days after Labor Day. Sylvia, welcome back. One of the comparisons that you were making and talking about prior to our last break was the difference between how they do things in other countries and how this country, one of the wealthiest in the world, how we do things. What are some of the striking examples that mm-hmm. your book reveals, your report reveals?
Well, I think surprisingly, when people always are, you know, people tend to think that the U.S. is the richest country in the world, and for you know, most of history we have been, or recent history certainly, compared to these European countries. But Norway has since passed us as far as per capita income goes, which I think is interesting and kind of is shocking to some people. And again, we also generate the most inequality. Because we have the least protections, we generate the most inequality. And so while it's true that many in the U.S. are very wealthy and that the U.S. in general is a very wealthy country, we leave many people behind. We also, compared to these other 20 countries, such as, you know, your typical countries, such as the United Kingdom, France, Germany, Italy, Canada, that's the type of countries we're talking about, developed countries, we have the highest poverty rate and the highest child poverty rate compared to these countries. We also have the highest infant mortality rate, and we have one of the lowest life expectancies of these countries. So our wealth does not correlate to, you know, necessarily better outcomes. And of course, one reason may be the access to health care and preventative health care.
How do you become wealthy in the United States? How do you do that?
Well, certainly, as I said, this downturn that happened in 2001, and now we're about 5 years into this recovery, even college-educated workers haven't done very well, and their wages have even been stagnant over quite some time. So it's not just kind of the middle or the low that aren't doing well, and really have to go quite high up into the income scale, the income distribution, you know, way up to the top to see any real gains.
Well, basically in America, maybe the way you become wealthy is to be born that way?
Well, certainly, we show in a new chapter that we never had in the book before. By the way, The State of Working America, this is the 10th edition, you know, so we're very proud of this publication. But we have a new chapter in there called Mobility that actually does look. So we have increased inequality, but some folks tend to think that, well, but there's a lot of mobility across classes, so you don't have to worry so much about the increased inequality. But in fact, we show that, and most of the research has shown, we pulled research from all over to look at this, that, you know, we don't have a lot of mobility, and in fact...
And define mobility.
You know, to be able to, maybe if you're born into a family that's uneducated in the lower, you know, quintile of incomes, that you're going to somehow supersede that and jump up and be extremely wealthy and go to the top quintile. You know, that's very unlikely. You know, we're not saying it doesn't happen. Certainly it happens once in a while. But in general, what determines where you get in life is where you start, as you've kind of suggested.
And when you were talking about college students that a college degree
mm-hmm.
determines or helps impact on the type of money that you're able to earn, but isn't looking at a college graduate in the year 2006 different than looking at a college graduate in the year 1980? College graduates now, not only is it more difficult for them to get jobs, but they come out of school with debt that has never existed before. So aren't they crippled or aren't they slowed down as a result of that? And do we factor that into how much income that they're going to be able to make?
Well, first, that's very important, but I would put out there, you know, it's always better to be educated than not to be educated. So it's because I hear a lot of people saying it's not worth it anymore, and I wouldn't agree with that. So I would say that, you know, getting an education is still worth it as far as in relative terms to not having one, because things are getting worse disproportionately for those who don't have college education. So you always have to keep that in mind. But and debt is definitely a factor in that, and so we want to make sure we have policies to make sure that people can get to school who want to go to school. And, you know, recently we've seen big cuts in the federal student loan program. So,
and the privatization of student loans.
Right.
Students now going to private
mm-hmm.
places to get loans, acquiring even more debt.
But having said that, it is interesting, especially in the last two downturns, that we see that having a college degree, having education, isn't necessarily the insular against economic downturns as it once was. So we see, especially following the last, the 1990, early 90s recession and the 2001 recession, that there are people that have college degrees that are struggling. Like I said, their wages have been stagnant in this recession, as well as low-income wages. Less so probably, but still we haven't seen great strides as we would like to see this far into a recovery. So it's kind of a two-pronged story. One, it's always better to be educated, but that is less of a protection. And that's probably due a lot to globalization and threat of globalization. And, we have white-collar as well as blue-collar jobs now that are kind of, affected by expanding globalization.
And when we talk about education, we talk about jobs, let's talk about what happens after you finished your working, what you do as a person, that you finish your working, that part of your life where you are a worker and now mm-hmm. you are a retired person. How does the United States compare to other countries in terms of the thing that allows people to stop working, the pensions? How do we compare? Because you did a chapter on, or at least you have some fact sheets about dealing mm-hmm. with pensions. What does your report say about that?
Well, the bad news is, and we've had new data that came out even since our report that came out last Tuesday from the Census Bureau that shows, again, the idea of job quality, the idea of getting a good job, a job that not only pays well but has attached to it good benefits such as health care and a pension or a 401k. And those, again, have continued to erode. So we have, employer-provided health care has gone down. It's now under 60%. We see that... That even at the high-end jobs, some of them, again, going back to the college-educated scenario, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a pension plan or a 401k plan. And, compared to other countries, we're kind of lacking as far as what you can do with your retirement here. And of course, one of the outcomes that's happening is we're seeing more and more, retirement age folks re-entering the labor force and staying in the labor force longer.
Well, I'm looking at an article that's in USA Today in their money section that talks about a bankruptcy judge in New York giving Delta Airlines the okay to terminate its pilots' pension plans.
Yeah.
So people are re-entering the market because it's not state. You can't retire in peace.
Yeah, well, this is a big problem, and certainly we're seeing, again, through this downturn, all employment rates for every other age cohort fell. But if you look at for those 55 and older, and even 65 and older, they have been on the increase.
Let me get to a caller or two. Do you have a question for our guest, Sylvia Allegretto?
Good morning to both of you. I'd like to know if debt from college is going to become the next enslavement tool by not paying people enough, and when they come out of college, making college too expensive for those who want it, and when they come out, can't find a job, but as soon as they come out, they've got to start to repay this money. This happened to my son, so I know it is true, and it wasn't as high or it wasn't as expensive as it is now, because that was 20 years ago.
Thanks.
So I'm wondering if America gets embarrassed about its prison labor being free as a form of enslavement, if going to college is just going to trap too many people.
Thanks for your call and question. Sylvia.
Yeah, we certainly know, especially for working folks, the children of working folks and low-income folks, the barrier to a college degree can be not just monetarily, but for many reasons, can be great. It depends on what you go to school for, where you go to school. But, certainly like anything else, it is a risk. There is, a probability that you could go to school, get a four-year degree, and come out and not make the money you thought you would make, or maybe even be able to be employed in what you studied for. It's certainly a risk. But again, I if you look at the differences between, people who have college education and those who don't, there's still a big, vast difference between the two. So if you can, it's probably worth it to go to school. But again, you know, maybe you should trade off and look at what maybe a trade school would do, or a two-year school, or maybe not to go to as expensive as a school, or start out at a community college, and certainly always be on the lookout for grants and those and fellowships and those type of things that are out there.
We're going to take another break. I'm talking to Sylvia Allegretto, an economist with the Economic Policy Institute, joining us from Washington, D.C. We are talking about the State of Working America 2006-2007. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Eastbound 70 between Bryan Road and 79, look for stop-and-go traffic. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry and 44, look for Marshall, look for slow traffic there as well. Westbound 270 at West Florissant and Graham Hanley, look for slow traffic there. Westbound 270 from Illinois 3 to the Canal Bridge, there's congestion that's been cleared this hour. Eastbound 40 between Chesterfield Parkway and Hanley, look for slow traffic due to an earlier disabled vehicle. Westbound 40 at 270 in Mason, look for slow traffic. Westbound 40 from Hampton to Hanley, you've got slow traffic. And all your approaches onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect delays. Northbound 270 at Manchester and Clayton Road, there's an accident on the right shoulder and it's causing backups through Doherty Ferry. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Start with a cup of McDonald's Fresh Brewed Premium Roast Coffee, add a warm, fresh-baked breakfast sandwich, and bring your morning into life-affirming focus. Wake up and smell your life. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s. This evening, mostly clear, low around 60. Thursday, mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s. And Friday, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-80s. Currently, we have 60 degrees. Lambert Field has 60 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else, where else, where else indeed are you going to get washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, everything that you need to make your house a home, your home a palace? Look, get on down to Sears. Get the best customer service in the entire state of Missouri. Get on down to Union and Natural Bridge. My name is Liz Brown. When you go and get your refrigerator, your stove, whatever you need, tell them I told you to.
The Citizens Commission on Human Rights of St. Louis Incorporated presents the Electric Shock Radio Hour, a call-in talk radio show airing on WGNU AM 920, on the net at WGNU.net, Wednesday nights starting at 7 p.m., hosted by Roger Teagarden, Executive Director of the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, St. Louis, Missouri. It is a timely and lively discussion of the scourge of modern civilization, psychiatry.
This is Shara Dalen. Join me for Women Inspiring Women every Wednesday afternoon on AM 920 WGNU. I'll be bringing my power tools, that is, power tools for women. Each week, I'll discuss who, what, when, where, and how to make it happen in your personal and professional life. So remember, join me, Shara Dalen, every Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. as part of Women Inspiring Women on AM 920 WGNU.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Someday
what you don't understand. My words might never explain, so I am hoping that time will. Things may not go as you planned. Dark clouds might bring you pain, but I will be in your heart still, telling you don't look down. Don't feast your eyes on things that are on the ground. And if it gets hard to focus when you're traveling almost empty.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This morning we are taking a look at the State of Working America 2006-2007. This is a result of the Economic Policy Institute, their book, The State of Working America. It's a comprehensive review of the U.S. labor market and living standards. Our guest this morning is an economist with the Economic Policy Institute. Joining us from Washington, D.C., Sylvia Allegretto. Sylvia, welcome back. We have some folks on the line that want to ask you some more questions. Let's get to some of those questions, and then I want to get back to race. Some of the topics that you dealt with in your book deal with Hispanics and people of African descent, and also I want to talk about CEO pay as well. But let's get to some of our questions here. Carfo, do you have a question for Sylvia Allegretto?
Yeah, this is T.C., and you just mentioned it. What role did race or racism play in working America since Ronald Reagan? I know a lot of my union brothers and sisters voted for Reagan, and they've been pulling that Republican ticket since Ronald Reagan. I think it came down to the issue of race and racism, and been getting kicked in the teeth ever since then. So did the young lady cover that aspect
of
working America?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we don't actually look at presidential outcomes of presidential races, or what we look at is an in-depth look at the state of working America. This is an almost 500-page book, and we do look at race. If you look at any of our chapters, we deal with wages, family incomes, wealth, all of them. We look at poverty. We have breakdowns by gender and certainly by race. And so one of the reasons we put this book out is that because a lot of the statistics that you hear, the general overall statistics, like the unemployment rate is 4.7%. That's a piece of information that's good to have, but if you then break that down further by race, for instance, you get a completely different picture. And then if you break it down further by gender, race and gender, you get another slice of information that's very important. And many times these overall statistics look much different once you start looking at them through a microscope.
So, and when we look at race, what are some of the things that we see?
Well, certainly, for instance, we hear and we applaud the home ownership rates. That's something we hear a lot about. But if you look at home ownership rates by race, you see that in 2005, the latest annual data, we have about 73% of whites owning their own homes. Well, under 50% of Hispanics and blacks own their own homes. So that's an example in this book of how we kind of, break things down and tell a little bit of a different story than you see sometimes in the overall press or in the statistics. We also break, for instance, home ownership down by incomes, where, people that are, in the top 25%, about 90% of them own their homes. The people that make incomes in the top 25%, well, at the bottom, again, it's under 50%. So you look at things by race, by class, and by gender, and they look much, much different. You look at wealth by race, and the wealth of the average black household is only a tenth of the wealth of the average white household. And certainly this is directly linked to the legacy of, discrimination and many other factors.
And the continuing legacy of discrimination.
That's right.
1-877-920-WGNU. You have a question for our guest, Sylvia Allegretto.
Yes, ma'am. Could you give the effects of illegal immigration on unskilled workers and outsourcing to India and China on college workers? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's an excellent question. I mean, we have kind of two ends of the spectrum, like I've suggested, that, you know, no longer is college the insular to economic downturns as it once was, and the gentleman hit on one reason why that is, and that's that we have opening up of borders through globalization, places such as India that have an oversupply of very educated workers that are waiting to take these jobs if they're given the opportunity. So certainly that's putting pressure on white-collar workers. And we see at the other end, you know, of course, this is one of the biggest debates going on right now is the effect of immigration and illegal immigration, especially on low-income workers. And, you know, it's a huge debate, so I'm not going to take a side. All I would like to say about that is that, you know, in the late 1990s, when we had a really healthy jobs market, jobs being churned out at 200,000 and 300,000 a month instead of about 100, which we've been averaging like the last 5 months, you know, when you have the great American jobs machine is working in the way that we would like it, and we have truly tight labor markets, we see that there is enough employment for everyone.
And let's get to the CEO pay. Talk about that.
Well, I think CEO pay, the easiest way to sum it up is, you know, it kind of topped out in 2000 and then took a little bit of a tumble, if you will, because of the stock market, the bubble bursting in 2000. But we're back. CEO pay is basically back on track. And to sum it up, the average CEO makes in one day what the typical American worker makes all year long.
1-877-920-WGNU. Dimitri.
Good morning, Liz. I have a question for your guest. I find the term home ownership a blanket term, and it's a repugnant term to me because it doesn't separate the fact that home ownership, people assume that you own the home, but in most cases they don't. The equity loans and the first and second deeds of trust on homes usually are larger than the home is worth. And it's comfortable to say, to use the category home ownership, but it's a myth because very few people actually own their own homes.
And thank you, Dimitri. And is that more true today than it has been at any other point in our history?
I'm not sure because I don't know how many people own their home outright and how many people, you know, have mortgages. Certainly his point of, you know, having mortgages is an important one. And we know now with the slowdown in the housing market and the fact that there are more of, we do know one thing today that didn't exist before, and these are kind of non-traditional lendings, these interest-only loans and no down payment loans. You know, it's kind of still wait and see attitude as far as is that a good thing or a bad thing. It's putting many people in homes, but is it putting people in homes that can afford them? Because you're not doing anybody a favor if you put them in a home and then they can't keep up with the payments, or once principal kicks in, their payments double or triple, and the next thing you know, they have to get rid of their homes and maybe even foreclose. And that's going to be harder to do, I mean, in a housing market that's slowing. So I take the gentleman's point. He's absolutely right on in that, you know, once you start looking into home ownership, something that's always touted as a positive, and for the most part it is, but certainly there are some caveats to that.
And that's hence the question that I asked in terms of how home ownership is different in the year 2006 than it was 20 years ago.
The loans are definitely a big part of that.
Absolutely, and the penalties that arise out of these loans are different than they've ever been before.
Absolutely.
Peter, you have a question or comment for our guest, Sylvia Allegretto.
Yeah, I enjoy your program. Sylvia, I'm sure you're familiar with the U.S. Census Bureau historical income tables on household.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at table number H3, where it talks about the mean household income received, when you look at the African-American and black, their difference, and it's divided up in the fifth, from the lowest fifth to the highest fifth, and also the top 5%.
Right.
The difference between the black household and the white household since 1967 through 2005 has been anywhere from 50% of or less than two-thirds. And African-Americans come in at the bottom of all other groups that they're showing, Hispanics, non-Hispanics, and also the Asians.
Right.
It looked like there's nothing getting better here on this.
Well, that's exactly, I'm impressed that you have the report. That's wonderful. I mean, people can download this report, from the census.gov website, and it's a very important report that comes out once a year. And exactly, there's just a ton of data in there, and you know, exactly what, you know, you've reported it. Exactly what's going on. There hasn't been a lot of movement, and African-American households are disproportionately struggling, and, you know, we would hope to have, you know, more policies in place to kind of help low-income families, such as expansion of the earned income tax credit, roll back the tax cuts that disproportionately went to those at the top, and that exacerbates income inequality, which is so great here in the United States. But, you know, I take your point. That's what you said is exactly what the report shows.
What are the work hours of Americans in 2006 and 2007?
Well, we work a lot. I mean, if you look at the long-term trends and you look at, you know, over countries, we work certainly the hardest, which is a pretty important point, because one of the reasons we have one of the highest per capita incomes is that we work a lot more than most. So that would help boost our per capita incomes, where a lot of, you know, we always hear about this time of year in summer, especially in August, the Europeans taking off a month of, you know, for vacation. So it looks like Americans, or at least American businesses, I'm sure Americans would love time off, or at least most of them. But again, like you mentioned at the top, you know, they can't get time off and we aren't offered a lot of vacation. And so, we end up working more and we end up consuming more goods and services instead of consuming more leisure like they do in Europe.
Mm. We're going to take a break here. I am talking to Silvia Allegretta. She is an economist with the Economic Policy Institute, joining us from Washington, D.C. And quickly, Silvia, where can people get a copy of The State of Working America 2006 and 2007?
Well, you can order a copy on our website, epi.org, but we also have a new website, State of Working America, all one word, stateofworkingamerica.org, where you can actually look at some of the chapters and the introduction and the executive summary.
Excellent. We're taking a break. We'll be back.
Wake-up call, global news update. Dateline Maputo. The labor minister of Mozambique has ordered the American security corporation Wackenhut to pay some $1.3 million to about 2,000 of its employees in that country who say they have had to work overtime without any pay, some of them for the last 12 years. Last year, the incident went to an arbitration panel appointed by the labor ministry, and Wackenhut lost and was told to pay the workers. But the company refused because they disputed the amount of money that was owed. Workers have indicated they are tired of being put off, and if Wackenhut does not abide by the labor minister's demand, they will go out on strike. And Dateline Washington. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich has come up with an 11-point plan for the Republicans to win the November elections. Gingrich says the GOP has to go back to the center-right it once held during the years of Ronald Reagan and espouse the values of the majority of Americans. His 11 points are as follows. Make English the official language and do away with bilingual ballots and citizenship tests. Keep tight control of the borders with a comprehensive immigration bill. Mandate voter ID cards. Repeal the inheritance tax. Restore property rights to combat the creep of eminent domain. Become energy independent from the rest of the world by giving the auto industry and others big tax credits. Control spending and balance the budget. Only give federal education dollars to schools that require competent teachers and accountability. Increase the government power of surveillance to protect us from terrorism. Concentrate on the threats posed by Iran and North Korea. And finally, keep God in the Pledge of Allegiance. This is your wake-up call global news update.
For the issues that matter most to you, of course, it's AM 920 WGNU. This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother on the award-winning Makeup Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to Sylvia Allegretto. She's an economist with the Economic Policy Institute. She's joining us from Washington, D.C., and we're talking about the state of work in America, 2006-2007. And, Sylvia, as we've talked a little bit about income class mobility and a little bit about wages. One of the things that I would like to talk about is women. How do women fare as we look at the state of working America in 2006 and 2007?
Well, actually, it's very interesting because, like the gentleman said on Tuesday, we had a new report out by the Census Bureau. And from that report always looks at the wages of wages for full-time, full-year workers, men and women, and they are down over the last year. So interestingly, I know the Department of Labor has touted this on their website, that the gender pay gap is the smallest on record, meaning that women now make 70, full-time workers, women make 77 cents on the dollar compared to men. But importantly, the only reason that is at its, the gap is at its lowest is because wages for both men and women are falling, but they're falling faster for men, which makes the gap smaller, but it's not all good news because even from 2004 to 2005, the wages for men fell just under 2% and just over 1% for women. And again, that's been several years in a row, for men 2 years in a row, for women 3 years in a row. So it's not all good news.
It's not good news at all.
Most people would love to see that pay gap shrinking. We certainly don't want to see it shrinking in this manner.
And so in terms of how this impacts upon working America, men's wages are dropping to almost equalize women's wages. What is that? Where does that take us?
Well, they're not equal, though. I mean, I would point that these wages have fallen from 04 to 05, so this is well into this expansion, and these are for full-time workers. That's really important. And but for men, they're about $10,000 more. I mean, for full-time workers, it's about $41,000. For women, it's $31,000. But again, it just goes to show you how this expansion is not really, the economic goods are being produced, and the growing economic pie is not really being, the slice going to the workers is not growing proportionately with that.
And when you released this work, the State of Working America, what kind of response have we gotten from it?
Well, like I said, we've been around a while. This is the second edition that I've co-authored with Larry Michel and Jared Bernstein, and the 10th edition that's been out from the Economic Policy Institute. We do it every other year. So we release it on Labor Day, of course, for a reason, because we're talking about workers. We're not looking at the economy from 40,000 feet. We get into it. We see how workers are doing, you know, women, African Americans, Hispanics, and we try to really look to get a better feel through the lens of working folks to see what's going on with them in the economy. So I think we've had a really good response, and I appreciate your time this morning. I'm actually going to have to run because I have another call, which is actually a great problem to have because we have had a response. I've been talking about this nonstop since last week.
And I just want to get one more comment out of you with respect mm-hmm. to health care, because you all mm-hmm. Deal with health care as well, and you started our conversation this morning with the fact that in Europe they do not have to factor in health care because there's a universal health care. In this report, what is the state of health care comparatively to 10 years ago? We're worse or better?
Well, I don't have the comparisons of 10 years ago, but we do know that the number of uninsured is the highest ever on record, and the uninsured has only increased. I mean, we have about 15.9% of our population without access to insurance, and that's about just under 47 million people. And even of working folks, again, we have uninsured working folks that are almost 1 in 5. So this doesn't happen in these other developed countries because they have universal health care, which helps their workers, which helps their population overall, and which helps their employers because it frees them up from this burden of having to try to shoulder these incredible increasing costs of insurance.
And I want to thank you and let that be the last word. Sylvia Allegretto, economist with the Economic Policy Institute, thank you so much.
Thank you very much again, Liz.
All right, take care. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, 1-877-920-WGNU. I want you to remember that on Saturday, of course, the Urban Institute meets, and the address is 1020 North Taylor, 1020 North Taylor. We are busy making more and more copies of Loose Change. We'll have them available for you as well. For those of you that didn't get a chance to get a hold of your T-shirt, or if those of you that would be interested in a George Bush Doesn't Care About Black People T-shirt, a fabulous T-shirt, you can come on down to the Institute on Saturday and pick one up, or you can email me, and I can get you to where you need to get your T-shirt. So the email, of course, is revolution@lizbrown.com, revolution@lizbrown.com. You need to get up. You need to get to me. As we look at the state of working America, I'm just... It's stunning when you look at these tiny little stories, these tiny little seven-word paragraphs or seven-line paragraphs in just one newspaper, USA Today. The bankruptcy judge that gave Delta Airlines the okay to terminate their pilot's pension plan, we're talking about 13,000 active and retired Delta pilots and their beneficiaries. Home prices climb, but this is the biggest slowdown in 3 decades. That should be a front-page story, shouldn't it? I mean, when we put our finger on the pulse of the economic world that we're living in right now, U.S. home prices continue to rise in the second quarter, but showed the biggest slowdown in 30 years. That's like George Bush and his, you know, we're fighting, the terrorists just, we're safer, but not safe. Huh? What is that? What kind of double talk, gobbledygook, fuzzy math worldview is that? We're safer, but we're not safe, huh? What is that? And that's kind of what this state, we're safer, but we're not safe, huh? U.S. home prices continue to rise in the second quarter, but showed the biggest slowdown in 30 decades. Seems to me that should be the lead sentence. The biggest slowdown in 30 years. No, you want to lead off with something that disappears in the light of the rest of the words. We're safer, but we're not safe. The lead off of that should be we're not safe. Shouldn't it? the lead off to this sentence should be the biggest slowdown in housing prices in 30 decades. That's the lead sentence. But then they haven't called me. They haven't called me to put together their sentencing structure. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I'll be right back at you after this break. Stay with me.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you and people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that.
Progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
Issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Another speech from President Bush today, and again, it's about the war on terror. This time, what to do with the detainees at Guantanamo Bay. More from ABC's Ann Compton at the White House.
Today's presidential announcement has to do with putting suspected terrorists before military tribunals. The Supreme Court ruled that wrong. Today, legislation to make it right, giving detainees at Guantanamo a few more legal rights. They may still not be enough to satisfy Congress.
The Supreme Court's ruled that the government cannot continue to hold the detainees if they're not charged. ABC News has learned that Pakistani officials have reached a deal with al-Qaeda leaders which would allow Osama bin Laden and his second-in-command to go free if they surrender and lead peaceful lives. White House reaction?
They seem to have been caught off guard, according to our people at the White House. The Pakistanis say they told the U.S. about this several months ago, that it was coming. The Pakistanis hope it's a way to make the area a little bit safer. After all, there have been 5 or 6 attempts on President Musharraf's life there, and his efforts to go into these areas have been hugely unpopular, with many defeats and lots of deaths.
ABC News investigative correspondent Brian Ross. It could be tomorrow. It won't be today.
NASA engineers are troubleshooting the electrical problem with one of the shuttle's fuel cells that forced cancellation of today's planned launch.
If a fuel cell is bad and we can't fly with it, then obviously we'd have to replace it. We've got a history of being able to replace it at the pad. But again, we're still premature before we get to that point.
NASA's Bruce Buckingham says the astronauts are taking the delay in stride. If the problem can be fixed in a day, NASA will try for a launch tomorrow. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Kennedy Space Center.
Know someone who really wants a Sony PlayStation 3? Good luck finding one when they come out in November. The company will only be able to make about 400,000 machines to start. It's having trouble finding a key part. Dow and NASDAQ both down in early going. This is ABC News.
Behind every great fan are tasty snacks from Walmart. A football party takes will, determination, and some DiGiorno pizza. And when that pizza joins forces with Chex Mix, Campbell's Chunky Chili, and washed down by Pepsi and Diet Pepsi, you're guaranteed a touchdown. Fortunately, it's easy to get all the fuel for your appetizer machine at Walmart. Come to Walmart to stock up on all you need to feed your crowd at the Walmart price. Get plenty. It's game time.
Want to get to the next level of your career? Earn a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix. It's education designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn your degree in 2 to 3 years. At over 170 campuses, they offer programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix at 1-800-853-4433. Offer not valid in Tennessee. Programs vary by campus. That's 1-800-853-4433.
ABC News is marking the fifth anniversary of the September 11th attacks with a series called Remembering 9/11. Today, ABC's Stephen Portney introduces us to air traffic controllers who watched the horror that unfolded that day.
Yeah, several situations are going on here. It's escalating big time.
It was just sheer terror once we realized what was going on.
Kurt Applegate and Dave Battaglia sat helplessly at their screens, aware that one plane had already hit one tower. They tracked United 175 as it flew toward the second.
We got to watch the unfolding of, like, the worst event that could ever happen in the United States.
They had nightmares for months.
I would just bolt up in the middle of the night saying, why didn't I do this? I wouldn't do that.
Both men still work at New York Center, keeping planes from colliding, remembering 9/11. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News, Washington.
Even small changes can help couch potatoes become healthier. Scientists say they notice major improvements when sedentary people exercise for just a few minutes every day. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Here's a WGNU News update brought to you by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. In the news, former Illinois Governor George Ryan is scheduled to be sentenced today by U.S. District Judge Rebecca Palmyre. Federal prosecutors say Ryan's sentence should be longer than the 6.5 years given to aide Scott Falwell. Ryan was found guilty in April on 22 counts of corruption. The U.S. Probation Office says Ryan's sentence should be between 8 and 10 years, and prosecutors argue he deserves a term near the high end of that range. Ryan's attorneys are calling for a maximum sentence of 30 months, citing their client's age and health problems. In other news, a St. Louis City emergency medical technician is among the latest casualties in Iraq. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reports Navy Reservist Christopher Walsh was killed by a roadside bomb Labor Day. Walsh was a 5-year veteran with the St. Louis City Fire Department. The 30-year-old grew up in Shawnee, Kansas, and came to the St. Louis area after he graduated from high school. And the weather's going to have to get hot and dry if farmers want to start their harvest soon. That's the latest word from the USDA, whose crop report for Illinois shows last week's cool, wet weather held corn and beans back from maturing. The USDA's Mark Schleisinger says only 20% of corn is mature, but it's worse for beans.
The soybean crop is maturing at a slower than normal pace. 17% of the crop is turning yellow, compared to 46% 1 year ago and 32% normally. 3% of the crop is shedding leaves, compared to 9% for the 5-year average.
Schleisinger says farmers are hoping for hot, dry days to dry out their corn. Farmers normally would hope to start harvesting their crops in the next few weeks. And that's a WGNU News update brought to you by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. You can help a child excel in school through September. Donate school supplies to KidSmart by dropping them off at your local Toyota dealer's service center. Toyota service centers, now that's a smart choice. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Northbound 270 on the ramp to 40. Look for an accident. It's been cleared, but there's some residual jams all the way back through Sappington. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to Chrysler. Look for an accident on the right shoulder. And southbound 170 at Brentwood, there's an accident backed up through Natural Bridge at this hour. Northbound 270 at Gravois and 44, that accident's been cleared, and there's a number of construction areas going on throughout the area, so just use caution as you roll through those work zones. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's. Start today with a cup of fresh-brewed premium roast coffee, add a warm, fresh-made breakfast sandwich, and bring your morning into a life-affirming focus. Wake up and smell your life. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Friday. Mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s today. Mostly clear with a low around 60 this evening. Thursday, mostly sunny, high in the lower 80s. And Thursday or Friday, look forward to partly cloudy skies, high in the mid-80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have mostly clear skies, and our temperature is 66 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 66. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much business to tend to. Much business to tend to. Oh, well, it looks like, I don't know, day two of Good Congress's day back from their five-week vacation. Wouldn't it be nice to get 5 weeks, 4 weeks off, summer vacation? Wouldn't it be nice to still get paid, get a raise when you've worked less days this year than any sitting Congress prior to 1948? Wouldn't that be lovely? And as lovely as that is for them, it's lovelier. It's lovelier. The Center for Public Integrity has taken a look-see into some of the other, generous opportunities that our good Congress appears to have. The question is, as with all of the generous opportunities that they have, is are they taking these? Are they exercising these opportunities at our expense? Or in violations of the rules. Let's talk about that this morning. Jim Morris, the project manager with the Center for Public Integrity, is joining us from Washington, D.C. to talk to us about trips that our good Congress people are taking. Jim, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Very good. Generous opportunities our legislators seem to have. Talk to us about the study, the report that you all have done, taking a look at the trips.
Certainly. We released a report in June, and we followed it up on a number of occasions since then, most recently this week. And we found a lot of things, but I guess the main finding was that members of Congress and their staffers took almost $50 million worth of privately sponsored trips during a five-and-a-half-year period that ended last year. And that what we mean by that is trips sponsored by corporations, trade groups, nonprofits, others that have business, in many cases, on Capitol Hill. So some of these were probably legitimate fact-finding missions. They're all described as fact-finding missions, by the way.
Well, no, some of them aren't described at all.
Right. True. If they are, good point. If they are described, they are invariably described as educational or fact-finding in nature. And some are. I mean, if a member of Congress goes to Iraq or goes down to New Orleans to look at the Katrina cleanup, I think most of us would concede that, those aren't vacations. But
by and large, most people were not going to New Orleans to look at Katrina cleanup.
By and large, most people were not going to New Orleans or Iraq. They were going to Hawaii on more than 150 occasions, or Paris on about 200 occasions, or Italy on about 140 occasions, and on and on. So there were a lot of highly suspicious trips, shall we say, and some were quite expensive.
So give us a rundown of what are the rules. Can they take trips sponsored by corporations for fact-finding reasons? We're going to talk about that when we come back. I'm talking to Jim Morris, project manager with the Center for Public Integrity. We're talking about congressional travel. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
We all know the scenario. You see a for sale sign and think, I want to invest, but real estate is complicated. Well, help is here. Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land of the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
We're the host of WGNU's newest show, Let's Get Wealthy. Our show provides real techniques for the everyday consumer on how to own a home and build wealth.
Tune in to Let's Get Wealthy every Wednesday at 11 a.m. because today is the day to get wealth for yourself. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Thanks for
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown, and I am talking this morning to Jim Morris, the project manager with the Center for Public Integrity. He's joining us from Washington, D.C., and we're talking about congressional travel. Jim, on the way out, I had asked you, what are the rules and regulations for congressional travel that's paid for by corporations?
Well, there are some rules, although they're not often followed. But one rule is, for example, you cannot, if you're a lawmaker or a staffer, you cannot accept a trip paid for by a registered lobbyist, say a Jack Abramoff type.
How'd that work? How'd that rule work out?
Well, not so well in some cases. Nor can you accept a trip from a lobbying firm or a registered foreign agent. So those are some clear rules. And there are some others. There's some limits on the number of days you can take a domestic trip and a foreign trip. And I won't go through all that. So there are rules, but a couple of things. First, waivers are often granted, and those are done in secret, by the way. So
who grants the waiver? Who do they ask?
The ethics committees, the House or Senate ethics committees, they will go to, and as I say, privately, in many cases, waivers are granted.
So wait a minute. They go to each other to ask if it's okay?
Well, right. It's a self-policing system, which is the problem, which is much of the problem. You know, the House Ethics Committee polices members of the House, and the Senate Ethics Committee polices members of the Senate. There is no independent body that, you know, passes judgment on these trips. And that, in fact, is one of the reforms that, you know, a number of people have called for. Let's at least, we're not going to ban this stuff, let's at least establish an independent body.
Do we know what the rules are, the requirements are for asking for a waiver and having one granted?
Again, it just seems to be as simple as going to the committee and saying, I know the rules say I can only take a four-day domestic trip, but I'd like to go for 6 days, and you know, here's why, and as far as we could determine, those waivers are often granted.
So we don't have anything in writing of what the rules are with respect to that?
Well, no. I mean, no, I don't, certainly not in front of me. We know what the basic rules are, but in terms of waivers, no, there appears to be a lot of latitude granted to the committees. But, privately funded trips in and of themselves are allowed in most cases, but they are supposed to be, as the way we put it, educational or investigative in nature, not subsidized vacations.
Well, are they supposed to be, or are they allowed to take a trip from a paid-for trip from a corporation that may have some kind of legislation pending in Congress?
Yes, they are.
How? Huh?
Pardon me?
I said, huh?
Yeah, well, a lot of people have said that. You know, again, there was earlier in the year, and then this died a quick death, but earlier in the year, the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, boldly proposed that, you know, this sort of travel simply be banned, that the sort of thing you're talking about, where you've got, you know, Microsoft or IBM or Exxon Mobil paying for a trip for members of Congress when there's legislation pending or might be. Hastert said, let's just eliminate all potential conflicts of interest and ban this sort of travel, and you can imagine how well that was received. It, like I say, it died a very quick death.
Don't we also have to look at, when we are evaluating these trips that these congressional folks are taking, the little gifts and perks that they get along the way?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know.
What are the rules about gifts that you
can
get?
Well, the rule is you're not supposed to take accept a gift of $50 or more on a trip, and a gift could be a round of golf, it could be, you know, something tangible, it could be some form of entertainment, tickets to a show or a sporting event. So the limit, technically, is $49.99 for any sort of gift on a trip. Now, again, we found violations. We found dozens of violations of that rule. You know, $75 tickets to the New York Yankees, things like that.
Another fact-finding mission, or that was just a gift?
I'm sure that was a fact-finding mission, yeah, with a little gift on top.
There you go. And in terms of can you get a waiver from your friends on the Ethics Committee to get a gift that's more than $49.99?
Apparently, yeah. Apparently you can. Or there's also a lot of apparent ignorance of the rules, because when we contacted some people who had violated either the gift rule or other rules, you know, time limits, other things, almost invariably the response was, well, I didn't know. You know, I didn't know that was the rule. You know, I'll do better next time.
What are the repercussions if you take a gift that is more than $49.99?
Well, I mean, in theory, you could be censured. You could be, you know, reprimanded in a public way. This never happens, by the way. Or you could ultimately, I guess, be booted out of Congress or fired if you were a staffer. But,
again,
this doesn't happen.
What triggers that? Do you have to be a Duke Cunningham in
I
order
guess
for?
So, yeah. I think it has to be. It appears that you have to do something pretty blatant.
And egregious. And the millions of dollars before there's punishment. But, well, let me ask this question. Did Congress punish Duke Cunningham? Or was it the court? So there, he still didn't receive any kind of censure. He didn't receive any punishment for what he did from his own, from Congress.
No. I think in that case it was already well along in the courts, as was the case with, you know, with Jack Abramoff also.
But Duke Cunningham was a congressman. They could have done something had they wanted to.
Yeah, certainly. But a lot of this doesn't rise to that level where you've got someone taking, you know, out and out bribes. A lot of this is more subtle, more insidious, but it goes on a lot more than most people realize.
Well, let's start at that one, what appears to be the first part of a House of Representatives trip that they take. Does it kind of have to start with them filling out this employee travel disclosure form? Is that where it starts?
Yeah, every member of Congress or staffer who takes a privately sponsored trip is supposed to fill out a form. And the forms themselves are problematic. They don't ask a lot, but they do ask some pretty basic things like where did you go and when and who paid for it and what was the purpose and how much did you get? How much did your lodging cost and your airfare and your, you know, transfer, other expenses, meals and so forth? But what we found is that many people can't even you know, supply that basic information.
Well, I'm looking at this one form that you have on your website, Stephen Wagaspek. In this on the form, and I kind of want to describe it for the audience here. You have destination. You have a space for destination, for sponsor, a space for purpose of the trip, total transportation expenses, total lodging expenses, total meal expenses, total all other expenses. Talk to us. Tell the audience about how Stephen filled out his.
Stephen didn't do very well because, and I'm not sure, I'm not even sure who he is. I assume, well, okay, he's clearly a staffer for Joe Barton, Congressman Joe Barton. But anyway, when he took this trip in January 2000, he failed to list a destination, so you don't know where he went. He failed to list a sponsor, so you don't know who paid for the trip. And he failed to list a purpose of the trip, so you don't know why he went. So you don't know where he went, who paid for it, or why he went. And all you know is that he accepted, about $2,300 worth of travel from someone to go somewhere.
For something,
yeah, right.
And
then we found many. We posted just seven examples of incomplete forms on our website, but we could have posted, you know, dozens more.
And when you all, what made you all do this? What made the Center for Public Integrity pursue this and do a report on it?
This project originated before I joined the center back in March, so it was already underway. The information gathering was underway months before I got there. So I don't know exactly what started it. I do know that they started collecting these forms, which are not available online, by the way, so the public can't see them. They can on our website, but they can't through Congress.
And if I could just interrupt for 1 second,
sure.
Because I'm looking at the little explanation of the form that these people, that the Congress people have to fill out, and this is a kind of a scary little line. The clerk shall make these forms available to the public as soon as possible after they are filed.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't, available to the public can be, you got
to
come.
Available to the public means you physically have to go get them. They are technically available to the public, but you have to, if you're in St. Louis and you want to see these forms, you would have to come to Washington and go into the appropriate offices in the House and the Senate and open a bunch of black binders and start looking through travel disclosure forms. It's sort of a tedious, sort of rather outdated system in this day when everything in the world, it seems, is, you know, is available online. This stuff is not, and you have to wonder if maybe that's by design.
So did you have any, did the Center for Public Integrity have any difficulty, because you have, and you have to walk into each congressperson's office? Or?
No. There are central offices, one for the Senate and one for the House, where these records are kept. You didn't have to walk into every office, but you did have to, our researchers did have to spend days and days and weeks just going through these binders, these black binders full of documents and photocopying and, you know, collating and all that. So it is a very tedious process, and they did it for a 5.5-year period. So it is certainly not very easily accessible to the public.
Were there any differences between Republicans and Democrats when you all looked at it? Did you compare it in that way?
We did compare it in that way, and it's interesting. I mean, the short answer is the Democrats took advantage of this system almost as much as Republicans did. I mean, it sort of depended on how you sliced it. For example, you looked at the 24 congressional offices, and by offices I mean, you know, lawmakers and staffers together, on which the most money was spent, and 15 of those 24 were Republican offices. But if you looked at individual members of Congress who accepted who each accepted more than $120,000 worth of travel, 17 of those 25 were Democrats. So bottom line is both parties have taken advantage of this system, and that, I think, is one of the main reasons there's been no significant reform.
In terms of the most egregious, what trip can you say was the most egregious from your organization's perspective, and why?
Well, it depends on how you define egregious. Mm-hmm. Do you mean, for example, a $31,000 trip to London by a former congressman from Virginia, a Republican named Thomas Bliley, who went on the nickel of Brown and Williamson tobacco? That was pretty egregious, $31,000 for one trip. There were, you know, $28,000 trips to Australia, sponsored by a defense contractor. So, you know, you sort of pick and choose here.
Okay, we're going to come back. We're talking to Jim Morris, the project manager with the Center for Public Integrity. We're talking about private dimes funding our congressional travel. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me. We'll be back. Travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else, where else, where else indeed? Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, you name it, they have it. You need a tractor? You need a lawnmower? You need some tools? You need a treadmill? Sure you do. Get on down to Sears at Union and Natural Bridge, Jerome Williams, and when you go there, you will experience the best customer service in the state of Missouri. I'm telling you, in the state of Missouri. My name is Liz Brown. When you get your shop on, when you go do your thing at Union and Natural Bridge, Sears, you tell them I told you to.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Fridays at 12 noon for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. I learned at an early age that animals matter to me. Every week we'll share your stories. We'll discuss issues that matter most to you and your companion animals, from breed-specific laws to puppy mills, and answer your questions about pet care as well. You'll also enjoy our special guests as they share their tales. It's an hour of fur, friends, and fun every week. Join me, Randy Grimm, for Animal Tales every Friday at 12 noon on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
The Citizens Commission on Human Rights of St. Louis Incorporated presents the Electric Shock Radio Hour, a call and talk radio show airing on WGNU AM 920, on the net at WGNU.net, Wednesday nights starting at 7 p.m., hosted by Roger Teagarden, Executive Director of the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, St. Louis, Missouri. It is a timely and lively discussion of the scourge of modern civilization, psychiatry.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Like a flower waiting to bloom. Like a light bulb in a dark. I'm just sitting here waiting for you to come on home. turn me on.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. This hour I am talking to Jim Morris. He's the project manager with the Center for Public Integrity, joining us from Washington, D.C., and we're talking about congressional travel on private dimes. Jim, can we talk about particular types of businesses and their ability or what they have done to fund the travel for our congressional members? In particular, I'm talking about the pharmaceutical industry. What kind of record do they have with funding the congressional travel?
Well, our most recent report, which was published earlier this week, found that members of Congress and their aides had accepted more than $600,000 in free travel from pharmaceutical interests and associated interests during the 5.5 year period we looked at. And the interesting thing about that is a lot of this travel occurred at the exact time when drug companies' profits were skyrocketing, in part because of legislation that was favorable to the drug industry.
A lot of trips during a time where they got legislation passed in their favor.
Right, exactly.
And when we look at the types of travel, can you describe some of the types of trips that congressional folks were taking during this 5 year period?
Yeah, I mean the average. The average trip. There were 325 trips total, and I had mentioned that they were worth more than $600,000 collectively. Each trip averaged about $1,900. So in terms of the extravagance of the trip, it wasn't that so much. Certainly not at the level of some of the other trips we looked at that were $20,000, $25,000, $30,000. But about 60% of the trips were taken by Republican lawmakers or staffers. And what else can I tell you? Most of the trips were sponsored by a trade group called AdvaMed, Advanced Medical Technology Association, which represents medical device manufacturers and pharmaceutical companies. And another big sponsor was a group called PhRMA, which is the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, which is the main trade group for drug makers.
And part of the examination that what your report revealed was it's not just the lawmakers, but staffers and family members got to go along as well.
And that happened. We pointed that out in our earlier reports as well. I think that's one of the things that maybe surprised me the most when we first got into this project some months ago, and that is that in many cases the sponsors, these corporations like drug companies, for example, targeted staffers more than the members of Congress themselves. And at first I thought, well, why would that be? It didn't make much sense. And as we talked to people, we talked to members of Congress and ex-members and other experts, it became obvious that the sponsors realized that a key staffer in some ways was more important. Getting the ear of a key staffer was more important than getting the ear of the member, him or herself, because that staffer had so much influence on the way legislation was written, the way the member of Congress behaved in committee, things like that. So, yes, very much. And then, the thing with the spouse is always kind of the killer for me, because I think most of us would say, all right, if this is a fact-finding mission, as you say it is on your form, why did your wife need to go? Why did your husband need to go?
What purpose
was there in taking him or her to, to London?
Were there examples of them taking kids and dogs?
Yeah, you're only, kids and what?
Kids and dogs.
Probably. Yeah, there were a number of examples of taking kids. I think the limit is one child, but far more often was a spouse. And again, when you've got a $20,000 or $30,000 trip to Hawaii, and your spouse goes along, I mean, why are they there? How is that not a vacation, at least for your spouse?
Well, don't we even have examples of fiancés going along?
Well, yeah, a fiancé instead of a spouse. But again, the taking the spouse along was certainly one of the biggest abuses that we found.
And so when congressional folks saw this report, or when you asked questions of them about the trips that they had taken, you said earlier that a lot of them said, I didn't know about the rule of the $49.99 limit on gifts I can take. What do they say when you ask them, why did your wife have to go or your husband have to go on a fact-finding mission?
Oh, they would say things like, well, you know, members of Congress are so busy, we rarely get to see, our wife or our husband, so this was a chance for us to spend some time together. And, oh, you know, by the way, I can't be bought. Yes, I know this doesn't look good that, you know, Microsoft spent $10,000 to send us to Las Vegas, but I'm an honorable member of Congress, and I can't be bought, so even though, you know, this probably doesn't look too good, don't worry, trust us.
And I can't be bought, but pharmaceutical companies and their affiliated trade groups spent more than $600,000 on trips and during this five-year period, and those companies' profits climbed.
The profits climbed, especially with the passage of the 2003, I'm trying to get the precise title, the Medicaid Medicare Prescription Drug Act of 2003. So, as I said earlier, a lot of this travel was going on right before or right when that piece of legislation was being considered back in 2003.
I know that in everybody's life, sometimes shame makes you do things when reason doesn't. Does it appear that any of these congressional folks have been shamed into making any changes in any of these rules or changing their behavior at all?
I don't think we'll know that for a while. I mean, some of the people we talked to, a congressman, a Democrat from Texas named Gene Green, for example, who had done a lot of travel with his wife, you know, to places like Pebble Beach, Las Vegas and Hawaii and Jackson Hole, Wyoming, you know, which are good, I guess, places where facts can be found.
I guess
but,
so.
many facts. But you know, at least he was, and some people simply wouldn't talk to us, by the way. They just wouldn't return our calls or just said, you know, no comment. Now, to his credit, Green did talk to us, and talked to me, and I said, well, you know what, this doesn't look too great, Congressman. What about this? And first of all, you know, again, I can't be bought. Don't worry. But in his case, he said, but I realize this doesn't look very good, and so I'm not going to do this anymore. Now, whether he's held to that promise, this was, you know, 4 or 5 months ago when I spoke with him, I don't know. But I think the main point I'd want to make is that any sort of sweeping reform, you know, a ban on travel, or the creation of, like I said earlier, an independent body that could say, okay, you can do this, no, you can't do that. That's pretty much gone. I don't think that's going to happen anytime in the near future.
This book, this black binder that holds all of these employee travel disclosures forms, is there anybody other than your organization, is there anybody that is charged with the responsibility of going through these forms to see whether or not destination spaces are filled out or purpose of trips spaces are filled out? Is somebody supposed to be doing that?
Yeah, there are people in Congress who are supposed to be reviewing these forms, but they've got many other responsibilities. And again, because this stuff is not online, although we have put a lot of it online, and I'll give you our website in a few minutes, but because it's not online, there's very little oversight. There's very little accountability. You know, you don't have members of the public constantly looking at this stuff, looking up their member of Congress. So, yes, there are supposed to be people monitoring these forms.
Who are these? I mean, is there an office? Who
yeah,
are
there
these
are offices. There are offices in both the House and the Senate. And they, you know, they certainly do what they can, but they've got, as I said, many other responsibilities. So I don't think it's fair to blame those people. And one of the two, and I don't recall whether it was the House or the Senate, is grossly understaffed. And I forget what the numbers were, but it was a very small number of people who were responsible for not only looking at these forms, but looking at countless other, you know, forms that members of Congress had to file.
Who are the people? Who are the people that would make the decision of putting this stuff online? Who would have to be lobbied to make that happen?
Congress could decide to do that. I mean, individual members could do it. You know, the ethics committees, the Senate and House ethics committees could say, you know, beginning January 1st, we're going to put all these records online.
Wouldn't
they could do it. Everybody, I guess say everything else in the world is online these days.
And wouldn't that one single act have a big input or impact on some people's behavior?
I think it would have a huge impact, and that's most people have said, let's at least do that. If you don't want to ban this stuff, okay. If you don't want to establish an independent body, okay. But at least put this stuff online where the public and the press can look at it whenever they want to.
Have a name search. I put my congressman's name in and see how often his name or his staffer's name comes up.
Right. Now, you can do that on our site, but only because we have, you know, put the database up. We have created this database, which is searchable by the public. And you can do that, but you can only do that on our site through June of 2005. That's as far as our study went. So if you want to know what, you know, your senator or congressman has done since June of 2005, you're going to have to come to Washington and look through some records because it's not available anywhere else.
Hey, can you do us a favor, Jim? We have to take a break in a minute or so here. I would like to know what Jim Talent and Lacey Clay have done. What kind of trick? Can you do that?
I can. I don't know how long it will take.
Okay, we'll try to
but
start.
I can, well, okay, I can.
Give us a Jim Talent one. Let's start with Jim Talent.
I will try.
Okay, thank you, Jim. We're going to take a break. Jim Morris, Project Manager with the Center for Public Integrity, joining us from Washington, D.C., talking about congressional trips on private dime. My name is Liz Brown. We'll be back.
This is Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU.
Scientists have discovered a way to reanimate dogs that have been dead for 3 hours. They fill you up with salt. They season you is what they do. It's a marinade, for lack of a better way to put it. So I guess realistically speaking, they could do this in China, right? So they fill the dog full of salt water. If it doesn't work out, the dog dies. Hey, you know, it's General Chow's chicken in the end. It all works out. Something about the zombie dog where you put salt water in them, kill them, and then revive them hours later, and the idea that it's intended for human trials. Who would volunteer for that?
Brett Rosen, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. on WGNU.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Baghdad. Is Army pride costing the lives of American soldiers? A report by NBC News says the use of rocket-propelled grenades by insurgents has killed scores of U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. Last year, commanders in Iraq asked their brass for a new system that would guard against RPGs and other anti-tank weapons. A procurement unit of the Pentagon discovered a high-tech system that shoots rocket-propelled grenades out of the sky before they impact their target, and it has a 98% success rate. It utilizes a scanner on top of a vehicle that looks in all directions and automatically detects when an RPG is fired. It then shoots a projectile and destroys the weapon a safe distance from that vehicle. This system is called Trophy, so why not use it? Well, it turns out that this system was created by a division of the Israeli Defense Force, and the Pentagon sees this as a threat to its own plans to create its own system from the drawing board up. It's already given a $70 million contract to the Raytheon Corporation to develop a similar system as part of a program called Future Combat Systems, which is already being criticized because of cost overruns and strange procurement arrangements. The program it plans for RPG defense won't be ready for at least 5 more years. This debate is splitting some military leaders because it plays politics at the expense of American soldiers. The Army has said flatly it's not interested in the Trophy system, so the Pentagon is going to try to get the Marine Corps to begin testing it. This is your wake-up call global news update.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in AM 920 WGNU every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, then go do the right thing.
Up next, Sort It Out with Lori and Claire. Helping you find the courage to make a change in your life on AM 920 WGNU.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Oh,
welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. This hour I am talking to the project manager with the Center for Public Integrity from Washington, D.C., Jim Morse. We're talking about power trips. Our congressional folks using private money to take trips for fact-finding reasons. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
Were you able to find out about Jim Talent?
Yes, I was, and I just did a quick search of our database, and again, I'll make sure everybody knows before we hang up here that they can do the same thing I've just done. But you could search by name, for example, and it appears that Congressman Talent himself did not take any of these trips, but approved 38 of them during our, and these would be 38 trips for staffers, for his staffers, during our study period. So he sent staffers to places, some are fairly mundane, but he sent staffers to places like Hilton Head, South Carolina, to French Guiana, which is kind of interesting, on a fact finding trip related to some sort of commercial satellite launch. Not sure why. Staffer's name is Philip Escaland. I'm not sure why Philip needed to go to French Guiana to look at a satellite, but he apparently did. Hilton Head, Hot Springs, Virginia, Napa, California.
Well, wine fact finding.
Hot Springs, Virginia, Honduras, and Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this just simply says fact finding mission. I don't know what facts were found. And then some pretty, again, some mundane places. Lakeview, Arkansas, not too exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City, Missouri. Germany and Belgium, London, and there was one other one that kind of jumped out at me. And again, people can see this for themselves.
And where can people go to find out the trips that Jim Talent up? This was while he was congressperson, or is this while he was a senator?
Well, this all says, the forms say representative, so I don't, when did he become senator?
He became a senator 6 years ago, I think it is. Yeah, so it's been a while. Well, I guess it would have been 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
now, did you do the same for senators?
Well, actually, this should pick up. This should pick up either senators or members of Congress. You just, and I'll tell people how to do this. You can just punch in the person's last name, you know, Talent,
mm-hmm.
Or Smith or whatever, and it will pull up trips either taken by that person or and or sponsored. I mean, approved by that person.
Mm.
So in this case, like I say, I pulled up 38 trips that Talent approved.
So I guess if we went through each of them, there may be some that say Senator Talent and maybe some that say Representative Talent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All these, for some reason, say Representative Talent.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't reflect, you know, when he became a senator.
Okay.
But it, you know, they should. It should be an accurate database.
And again, where do people go to get this information?
All right, people go to our website, which is www.publicintegrity.org. And that's one word. .org, publicintegrity.org, and then at the top of the page they'll see Power Trips, which is the name of this project, and they click on that. And then there's a feature on the left that says Search Power Trips Database, and that gives you, you click on that, and that gives you a little search form, and you can search by member of Congress or by sponsor if you want to see how many trips, you know, Anheuser-Busch sponsored. You could punch that in, or by traveler, which may be different than the member of Congress, you know, if you want to. If you're interested in a particular staffer, let's say, you can search by his or her name.
So I guess
you can even search by destination. You want to see how many people went to Paris,
or
by time period. You know, you want to see who took trips during a very specific period of time.
Wow, this must have really. I understand why this took a long period of time.
Yeah.
This is a very, very detailed study.
Well, it is, and a lot of people put a lot of hard work into it, and I guess the sort of tragedy is that we had to do this. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Again, and we were happy to do it, but it's sort of a shame that a nonprofit has to do this when Congress itself could make this same information available.
And should make this information.
And should, many say, yes.
So in terms of when we do a search by name, is there anybody's name that pops up more than anybody else's name in terms of the trips? Is there the number one trip taker?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're going back to June of last year, and that's when our study ended. But, you know, so there are a lot of names. I mean, some of the main big travelers are people like Joe Barton of Texas and our friend Tom DeLay, a big traveler, no surprise there. You know, Don Young of Alaska. And some of these folks are, you know, committee chairmen like Young, for example, And so perhaps a little more travel would be expected by them or their staffers, giving them the benefit of the doubt. But John Boehner, as I say, Joe Barton are some of the major travelers. But again, it's kind of fun to just to play around with the database.
It really would be fun because it would be fun to figure out when these trips are being taken. Is there any period of time that these trips are being taken? Does it coincide with their, their 4-week vacation periods?
Well, yeah. In fact, somebody, one of my colleagues just yesterday said, you know, we should have done that. We should have just broken it down by, you know, by month and found out, and as we suspect that a lot of these trips take place in August.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Washington basically shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
and they get 4 weeks off for vacation.
They get 4 or 5 weeks off. Some would say more.
But, some would say a lot more.
Yeah, but certainly at least 4 weeks off. But we didn't break it down that way, but it certainly could be broken down that way.
Because you can search it that way.
Search by time period.
Yes,
yeah.
So an individual could go into your database and look at that time period and search.
And for for an individual, for, you know, Jim Talent, and to see what he was doing in, you know, the first half of the year 2000. You could do something like that.
And what conclusions can you make or observations can you draw about someone like Jim Talent, who had 38 trips that he approved of but no trips that he took? What observations can we make about that?
I don't know what to draw from that. And again, I wouldn't want to swear to that. And
mm-hmm.
again, people can look for themselves. That seems a little odd.
Mm-hmm.
that he would approve 38 trips for his staffers but none for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to make of that. That's a little unusual. Usually you get a mix where, you know, you've got a member of Congress who takes a number of trips, him or herself, and, you know, approves an additional number of trips for staffers. But I don't know that I've encountered one where the member himself appeared not to take a trip.
And, again, you can when you search this, you will be able to count up all the money that has been spent and by whom.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you'll have to do the math yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you can also see the individual forms too, by the way. So if you want to
see how well they fill out the forms,
you can see the exact form that we saw,
mm-hmm.
you know, and scanned in. So that if you want to, if you're interested in this trip to French Guiana that was sponsored, that was approved by Talent, and figure out, well, what was that about, you can pull up the form, which may or may not be complete, by the way, but you can at least pull up the form and see what the staffer wrote down.
And are these forms filled out mostly by staffers, or are they filled out by the congresspeople themselves?
Well, whoever takes the trip is supposed to fill them out.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was a staffer, then the staffer's supposed to fill it out. If it was a member, then the member's supposed to fill it out.
And I want to go back to something that you said. We have a couple more minutes. That was very intriguing to me. The fact that these companies go after the staffers is one of the reasons that they go after the staffers, aside from the staffers having the ear and often the major influence on these elected officials, is it because they know that they can reward the staffers, that they can like kind of sell it to the staffer as you get to go on this too?
Yeah, and some would argue that staffers are maybe a little more easily wowed.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you know, these members of Congress, people like John Boehner, pretty well traveled, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And a trip to Hawaii or you know, Mexico might not be that big a deal to them, but to some staffer, especially maybe a junior staffer or not terribly senior staffer, you know, gets an all-expenses trip to Hawaii with...
For he and his wife.
With the spouse,
mm-hmm.
To maybe attend a seminar for a few hours or perhaps give a speech. That's pretty heady stuff, I would think, you know, especially for a younger staffer who might not be used to that sort of treatment.
Did you all talk to any of the staffers that took these trips?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talked to many staffers.
And what did they say? Was it different than what the explanations given by the congresspeople were?
Not really. Just, oh, no, these were fact-finding missions, and you know, it was important that I go to this conference or this meeting in Las Vegas to hear what, you know, fill in the blank, you know, had to say. This is important stuff. And Not all that different. Staffers, I think, were even less willing to talk to us than members of Congress, which isn't saying a lot. And, you know, there were a lot of unreturned phone calls. I found one staffer. I forget his name. I'd have to look it up. But, well, here it is. He was his name is David Grimaldi, and he is a staffer, or what I think still is, for a Democratic congressman from New York. And he went to Santa Monica, California, and stayed at a hotel that cost $550 per night.
Wow.
But a little little more than I usually.
Touch more, yeah.
Yeah, a place called Shutters on the Beach, which is kind of a celebrity hangout in Santa Monica. And the interesting thing about this was I got a hold of Grimaldi, and I said what I was doing. I said, I see you went to Santa Monica a couple of years ago, and that Clear Channel Communications paid for it. Why did you go? He said, I don't remember. I'll get back to you. And you can guess what happened. He never got back to me.
But
it's hard for me to imagine that a trip, you know, to Santa Monica 2 years ago, that you're suddenly blanked
on why you went on that. Well, Jim, one more final question. The teacher in me requires me to ask this. Is there any place where these people are supposed to submit a report on what the fact-finding was all about?
No, that's supposed to be dealt with these forms. And the forms themselves are problematic. As I say, the forms demand very little in the way of information, which makes it even more outrageous that people don't fill them out properly.
So all they saying fact-finding is enough.
Fact-finding is literally enough. You have to put that down.
Mm. Jim Morris, Project Manager with the Center for Public Integrity. One more time, website, please.
www.publicintegrity.org.
Thank you so much, Jim, for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.